You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you. Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM. And welcome, 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 dear listeners. Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. Yes! It sounds like there might be a few donkeys attached to my voice and my, what do they call that thing, Helmut? Your, the oomph in the discussion.
Yeah.
But I've got coffee and water. Don't you worry. Don't you worry. Helmut, afternoon.
Yeah, man. What's up?
No, I'm okay, man. I'm, we're just sliding on a banana peel to reach our destinations, obviously.
Usually that's my thing, but
yeah, I don't know what's up with this chair. You know, ever since I moved, since I quickly started, you know.
Thank God you have taken over.
I gotta go back to my chair. I've gotta go back. But yeah, how's it going?
Whether it is a comedy coup in slow motion.
it's more like a conversion situation taking place.
But the day is good. It seems to be getting hotter, or it's just me.
No, it's a concept also of understanding what's currently happening. But that thing I shared with you yesterday, which was tagged into the June climate meetings discussion that we looked at yesterday. So for the listeners who didn't see what I shared with her, would literally hear on stream and during the show, I showed him the World Meteorological Organization's particular, because they assess from what they gather from, affiliate in, weather agencies on various parts of the world.
Yeah.
They basically give the WMO the best possible analysis and picture of the global climate and weather predictions, forecasts for the next 3 months. And they measure this. They can do this for up to 3 months. They can be accurate.
Yeah.
Or close to being accurate. Now, what they do is, Helmut, and this is why I love, you know, scientific work, basically. They explain they have to measure there's a weather system that feeds in from the Atlantic Ocean over the Americas, over the two continents, into the Pacific Ocean. There's a Pacific Ocean southern particular weather system. There's an Indian Ocean weather system that contributes. And then there's a northern Pacific Ocean contribution into how El Nino, La Nina systems occur. If there is above average heat indicators from water, the water in the Pacific Ocean, the heat on the water, if they detect above average heat indications, it spells out an El Nino occurrence from now, July, heading into the first half of next year. And if it's cooler than average, below the temperature, the average temperature that they put down there, then it could indicate a La Nina system coming about.
Yeah, they could have just, given this phenomenon.
Man, that's why I love
English names.
But that's why I like geography. I mean, that's the thing about geography. What name are you going to go give the Tunguska event?
The Tunguska is the name of a location.
Yes. The Pacific Ocean is also the name of a location because what's that guy's name? The guy that went down around the first guy around the southern tip of South America? I almost said Amerigo Vespucci. The other guy. Magellan.
Oh.
Magellan was most the guy that gave the Pacific Ocean its name because he called it the Pacifist Sea or the Sea of Pacifists because he's most the guy that sailed most into a dead spot where there was no wind.
What's this? No, that's not the Drake's Passage is not known for the wind. It's just known for some crazy strong current.
Isn't Drake's Passage through the North Atlantic past there between, what's his name? Between the North Pole and and Alaska.
No, Drake's Passage is between the South Pole and South America.
Then it is that part. It's the Drake's Passage. Yeah, and it's Magellan's Pass and Drake's Passage.
So it has multiple names.
Well, that's
depending on the poor guys that drowned there while trying to navigate the.
No, not the poor guys who drowned. The situation was Magellan was the first guy that sailed into the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
That's why he's the guy that gave it its name. Mm-hmm. The downside is at that stage, it was literally geopolitics.com.na.
On steroid.
At that stage, to find a trade route to the East Indies,
yeah,
which was Asia, the East Indies was literally the concern. Why? Because they knew of the this thing that China is championing, the Belt and Road Initiative.
Yeah.
Genghis Khan is the guy that championed the Belt and Road, basically, which is also known as
his brainchild.
Yeah, which is, okay, not actually his brainchild. He realized it exists. Why? Because the Venetians, the guys from Venice, Marco Polo and his dad, them, they were holding the secret to accessing the Spice Road, which was the other name of this Belt and Road Initiative, mm-hmm. of the Belt and Road. It was the Spice Road. The Spice Road were these camels and these traders that made this long caravan. It's people that were basically moving up and down
mm-hmm.
from Central Asia to Asia itself.
They're basically the equivalent of the shipping industries today.
Yes,
because much of the the trades back then, in terms of regional cargo movement was done via camels.
Yeah. Now, then the Dutch obviously stumbled upon this thing, because remember, for the Dutch East India Company to proliferate the way it proliferated, to becoming history's biggest and wealthiest company on record, only to be seconded by the British East India Company, which later on is number two in human history for being the biggest company on this planet, and combined Apple, Google, Meta, Helmut, they only beat the British East India Company in terms of size together, if you put those companies together.
Yeah.
With Amazon and Tesla, if you put them together. Together, they would only beat the British East India Company.
Not separately.
Their valuations, their financial valuations are far, far, far inferior to number one and number two. Those companies were so wealthy, Helmut, that remember I keep referencing there's a documentary I saw made by a guy that recently graduated in history in the Netherlands, a Dutch guy. It's like 25, 26. And he decided to make this documentary for his YouTube channel. And when he made it, the hypothesis he put forward is, do the Dutch really need to work?
Because of the wealth they have amassed.
There are some people there in the Netherlands that don't have to work. They just keep inheriting. But you won't know that this person is inheriting so much generational wealth that has survived multiple world wars, Napoleon itself, and other
survived things. More like funded some of it,
but I mean the wealth just keeps the wealth just keeps being transferred. Now I don't have an issue now, Mahmoud, mm-hmm. with such particular generational forward thinking. Where one,
in other words, if you want to have generational wealth,
you must there have
90% chances. You must have
a swashbuckling great
grandfather who was
great grandfather
tura boy on steroid.
Yes, with a musket and a cutlass. Uh-huh. A cutlass is a sword that sailors used. It's a specially one-handed sword. Not a panga, not a machete. Mm-hmm. It's a cutlass. And he should have been a swashbuckler, and he should have lost a few teeth due to scurvy at that time. Yeah, scurvy was a serious...
Not a very good time to be alive.
Scurvy was a serious illness for sailors at that time. Scurvy, do you know what scurvy's Afrikaans name?
What's that?
Skierbite.
Why does that sound funny?
Well, that, you asked the question in terms of are there conversions of words in English, and I'm giving you such a particular Afrikaans lesson today. Yeah. At one stage, you've got to beat the Prime Minister at his Afrikaans. But here's the thing. Okay. The Prime Minister technically went to a school where they were. The main language was Afrikaans.
Man, I've had half a century to practice. Give me a break.
So I'm just letting you know, Helmut. I'm just letting you know.
Yeah.
Tsumgwe doesn't help. You know, you've really got to immerse yourself. But anyway, besides the immersion. So that was part of the thing. Geopolitics 101. So the British will call it Drake's Passage. The Spanish will call it Magellan's Passage. Historically, they reference the guy that's there first, that being Magellan, who also survived. He didn't survive the mutiny, because as they sailed into that dead spot into the Pacific Ocean, his fleet sailed into a dead spot, which technically is the time which we are now using the World Meteorological Organization to understand if there's going to be a La Nina, El Nino occurrence somewhere in the world. So he probably sailed into the spot that was busy determining the next rainy season for the whole southern hemisphere. And that, dear listeners, we're done with the geography lesson combined with the history lesson right there. We're technically supposed to be talking and starting off on the discussion of critical rare earth or rare earth minerals discussion here for today's session. If you've seen our social media poster, welcome. Thank you for seeing it, and thank you for following us, you know, in terms of participation on the digital platforms. But you always turn to when we've got the show coming up, which will be from 4 to 7, as we always do here on the number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. Helmut, I got to ask you your first verdict. and I know, possibly, because... I have to keep this as scientific as possible. What's your first verdict after listening to the audios?
Before we get to...
I just want to know your verdict, Amor.
Yeah. Before we get to the rare earth minerals.
Yeah.
you know, I never really looked up the terms of La Nina and El Nino.
Yeah. Okay. What do they mean? Because I also didn't look it up.
So according to Noah, that's Noah, not the guy that made the boat. This is...
not the other Noah.
Yeah, not that Noah. This the
not the biblical one.
Yeah, this the American, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Yeah,
yeah.
Alongside the APA, they've got Noah.
The APA.
The EPA. The EPA is the Environmental Protection Agency.
No, I'm not sure about that one, but this NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Yeah.
I learned about these guys in a movie or a documentary. I'm not sure which one is, but this just one of the, but one of those two. But anyway, come back to their article on this now. They put them together. They're both Spanish, the words. They're both Spanish. They're both El Nino and La Nina. El Nino means little boy in Spanish.
La Nina means?
Little girl.
Who genderized Joe?
It sounds a little Epstein, but the thing is when you look at...
I knew you were going to go there. Okay, let's leave the Epstein references. Let me switch the camera to you.
After reading your back off.
Yeah,
after I've reading. Never been the same again.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Facts are facts. I can't argue against that.
Yeah. Now, there are just the two things that I would like to point out. Then they just have one. Basically, the whole thing is the influence of weather in different regions of the world, depending, and this influence is not some kind of miracle or the work of God.
Mm.
It's just that the movement in air current.
Exactly.
Yeah, and
no, that's why I explained those things that were converging into the Pacific Ocean.
Was
basically what this. I followed them also on social media, the World Meteorological Organization.
Yeah,
and just last night they posted this thing as an explainer, because I think the explainer was posted there to help sensitize people where La Niña, El Niño technically comes from,
yeah.
what feeds into it. Now, if people had explained these things from Gyartut, you know, from year X, wherever, Africa, that's just the Afrikaans expression, Gyartut, yeah. Helmut, we wouldn't have been sitting with the confusions of trying to understand geography in 2026.
Okay, here's the thing. During El Nino, trade winds weaken. Warm water is pushed back east towards the west coast of the Americas.
Yeah.
El Nino means little boy in Spanish. South American fishermen first noticed period of unusually warm water in the Pacific Ocean in the 1600s. That's what you pointed out earlier, that when weather experts looked at the Pacific Ocean and they see that the temperature is a little higher than it usually, you know, than it's supposed to be, then they can easily use that that rise in temperature, the, you know, from average, from what is usually observed, to predict the weather part, you know, the weather of what the weather is going to be, where this wind is headed, depending on the direction, of course.
Yeah.
Now, then they give you a full name of the whole El Nino thing, but one thing they point out is that El Nino can affect our weather significantly. The warm waters cause the Pacific jet stream, this is basically air current, to move south of its neutral position. With this shift, the areas in the in northern US and Canada are drier and warmer than usual. So whether you're going to end up with a La Niña or El Niño is going to be with a La Niña, which basically means a little warmer. And I mean El Nino, which basically means a little warmer, and from the look of things, La Niña means a little colder than usual.
Mm.
So you have one that is indicating that it's going to heat up, it's going to be hotter than average. That's El Nino, or it's going to be colder than average. That's La Niña.
Yeah.
So when they say you are most likely going to be experiencing an El Nino, what they mean is a chance are very high you guys are going to get a little cooked than usual. So when they say you are going to experience a La Niña, what they're saying is there are lower temperatures expected than usual.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that I understand the difference between La Niña and El Nino. Let's look at rare earth minerals.
Mm.
From the look of things, we have the UN guys telling us that we have that word. What's that magic word? Potential.
Yeah, that's the magic word.
That's the magic word.
That's a super magic word there.
Now we have the potential to participate in the world of rare earth minerals. Is that thing even on?
Well, on you, mine is on, but yeah, we could be, don't worry.
But the thing is, if you look at it, rare earth minerals. Now, I just decided to, look up this whole thing. So, rare earth minerals. What are rare earth minerals? And I got my definition of what that is. Okay, now we're live.
Yeah.
Now we're cooking with gas.
Yeah.
Now, according to...
Very pollutant, but yes, we're cooking with gas.
we're cooking with gas. Now, what's that? What are rare earth elements and why are they important? There are two articles I read on this subject. One is from the geoscience profession that looks to be American, but one that I focused more on was, is an article from, article from the European Commission.
Yeah.
They both look at elements. The geoscience guys, they are looking at it from basically defining the technical terminologies, what are these elements, and also what they are used for. But the European Commission guys, they are looking at it from not just their uses, but their value, their demand when it comes to the market, and not just that, but one thing that they also look at is which send me in the direction of going, just how sustainable is this whole thing? Because they are rare, they're also ridiculously expensive.
Do you know what's one of the surprising things to hear.
Yeah.
And I know you heard the presentation. The presentation was done by the guy from the Loftal mining complex, the Namibia Critical Metals Incorporated Company. That gentleman gets up before the other gentleman that goes into a completely mind-numbing experience of explaining, because obviously the voice tone was the big concern. But the first guy, the Namibian, not the guy from Canada, who was presenting through video conference.
Online, yeah.
Yeah. The first, the Namibian, and I liked his presentation because primarily he explained the scenario of, when you look at the critical or these rare earth metals,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to use metals for now, the yeah. word metals, yeah. is that, used in the manufacturing of consumer electronics and the prevalence of these electronics in the modern day economies around the world is that a lot of these things use in their circuit boards, for example, like the smartphone of mine, just to indicate to the listeners, like the smartphone basically that you would have around you, is that the circuit board in the smartphone, the magnets, and specifically the magnets. Because
the magnets are the
main concern, which needs the main ingredients for communication. Because
yeah.
magnets are used in communication. If people did not know that, there's a magnet in this mic. There's a magnet in these headphones. There's a magnet in this tablet in front of me. There's a magnet.
Interesting enough, magnets
in speakers. They are very prevalent. They're super prevalent.
We basically copied that from Mother Nature because our planet itself is one giant magnet.
Yes and no. If you go read up about the Earth's magnetism.
Hence the magnet part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a yes and no question. Yes, we did copy it. And the discussion, obviously, if you ask yourself, how is a magnet produced or made? That's also a different scenario to look into. And then also, where does the mineral for the magnet itself come from? Now, that presentation that the guy from the Loftal mine gave, he explained there, and this is the funny part of his presentation, that the minerals that form part of the critical rare earth minerals, on the periodic table are not on the periodic table because the guys apparently did not know, should it be part of the one main mineral that is the metal that's on the periodic table,
yeah.
or should it be discarded and not thought of as a metal. Now, the funny thing is, you have to mine these minerals. Like you mine iron ore, like you mine copper ore, like you mine lithium, like you mine gold and manganese and cobalt. You have to mine this thing.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is also, on top of this, showing how the rare and the critical part, is that these metals are so small, their deposits. Okay, not small in like the quantity. It's when you try to look for the thing in your hand. If I give you a rock and you look for the thing,
you know what you're looking for, you.
Yeah, unless you're that geologist whose eye is trained so well that you know the particular rock structures. The guy explained that if you crush the rock that these things are contained in, it's a 50% chance you might get the deposit or you might not get the deposit.
So it's worse than oil.
The worst part is even after you've crushed the thing,
yeah.
then you've got to sift the thing and what they call that process, it's like refining it further.
So you basically have to grind and then,
sort and then filter, yes. And even after the filtering, what you started with was a 50% chance of you scoring something from a rock is probably that you would be getting close to 40% out of that 50%. So technically you've been working on a 1/3 basis of achieving for every rock that you crush. Ne? You've been working on a basis of scoring at your probability of achieving something commercial is based on a 1/3 probability, Hamad.
Okay, there's something that was and you know, one of my One of my sources was, you know, one of my sources is just an article that he wrote. The moment that he suggested the topic, I was like, well.
Let me go see if Dwight wrote the article. But that's why I give you the full audio. Because the article will only capture half the thing.
I got it. Because I read the article before. I just didn't read all of, all of it.
Yeah.
So when he suggested that you know what, let's talk about it. It's like, you know what, I'll just go and start from there and then come back to the audio. Then you can go to other external sources.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. There's one article that I came across that mentioned basically the two articles that I mentioned, the two articles that I pointed out in the description, in the description that they are found near, is it Sossus Flay?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now those two elements were also, are the ones that basically led me to.
No,
the,
not Sossus Flay.
What's that?
The Speergebied, the Tsau Cape.
The Tsau what now?
The Tsau Cape National Park, which is the Speergebied or the Speergebied. Huh. It's what the UNIDO guy explains, or the Loftal guy explains. They explain that there are two areas that have large deposits, mind you, in
large.
Rare earth. Now, one of
so you have large deposits of things that are difficult to find.
No, that are technically protected. You can't mine there.
Okay, now.
but it is declared, the reason it is a Speergebied, ne, why it was set up.
Yeah.
Was because to mine there, to keep the indigenous African population outside.
At this point I have to ask, who the heck came up with that idea?
The Germans.
Yeah. The same guys that came up with the genocide. Now, we are here talking, now you're here thinking like they are infallible. My point is, why the heck do we have the thing?
Now, the concern is, if you read between the lines of what, and this is if, and now the concern that I'm looking at is obviously the concern that comes through from civil society and NGOs.
Yeah.
For example, the Namibia Chamber of the Environment, I know its acronym is NCE. They don't like the idea that the first phase of the green hydrogen program in Namibia is being set up outside Lüderitz, which will be set up in the Tsau Cape National Park. So they go talk about protected plant species and all that. Understandable. Completely understandable. But the concern is there. This is also where priorities are warped.
Yeah.
Priorities are warped, Helmut, that you and I, we can't even have a flat tire on that road that runs through the Tsau Cape.
Because it's on the road, protected area?
No, because we might be locked up for potentially picking up a shiny stone. I've told you the story multiple times.
I know that, which is why I'm asking myself a lot of questions right now, including one which is, who the heck came up with that?
Yes, the Germans. The South Africans just inherited it. And the Namibian government, just inherited from the South Africans. And now we are sitting with a mess, which technically borders on your human rights in terms of being able to move wherever you want to move in Namibia, unless there are clear restrictions. Because here's the thing. No one is mining in the Speergebied. No one is mining there.
But the place was called that.
Because they wanted to first mine, but you keep out. You know, the local Africans. You do population control.
Hang on a second. So the system was built to keep Africans out, and then Africans inherited it, and then kept keeping Africans out.
And then other Africans inherited it further. Mm-hmm. You know, the main Africans were supposed to be inheriting it, inherited further.
Yeah.
And then just perpetuate with the process.
To keep themselves out.
Yes. Or to keep other Africans who are not of the similar, you know, station in life. Out of the Speergebied. That's why the...
Even those who can't afford the polony.
Yeah, even those who can't afford... Especially those who can't afford the polony.
We still have a lot of discussions to do.
Yes, Yamut. So, if we are trying to solve... For example, like when we did the ancestral land report a couple of weeks back. Mm-hmm. You remember what Judge Waitella said in that foreword? This discussion is a lot more nuanced. He technically warned President Geingob, you know, my guy, if you want to walk into a sea of piranhas. By all means, here's the report.
Go ahead.
I'll just let you know, they have no mercy. They are flesh-eating piranhas.
Okay, look, if you ask me, this whole thing is about updating everything to suit the current status quo.
You'll have to define the current status quo as being what?
The status quo is we live in Namibia in the 21st century in 2026.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a trade relationship with Germany. We have a trade relationship with the European country. We don't have a colonial relationship anymore.
Yes.
Things have changed a lot.
Yes.
We're supposed to change our domestic institutions and regulations to reflect trade relations, not just with European countries, but with our neighboring countries, including South Africa and pretty much, well, Asian countries, North and South America.
Yes.
But from the look of things, we still have a lot of things that we will have to be updated to suit the relationship that we have today. We're not being colonized anymore.
No, we're not. Even though you might claim the current way in terms of how global North versus Global South relationships is based, because they obviously have the stronger currencies, which is the biggest injustice in the equation of bilateral.
Yeah, that's the biggest one.
In the equation of bilateral relations, the biggest injustice is the currency values.
Yeah,
just because I'm sitting with a bunch of Hendrik Witbooi's, Sam Nyoma's, and the WhatsApp brass banknote, you know. Let me change that sentence. Okay, let me start again. Just because I'm sitting with a whole bunch of Hendrik Witbooi's, nah.
Well, that $30 looks like a smiling contest.
Okay. Let's be serious. Okay. Just because I sit with a whole bunch of Hendrik Witbooi's, currently right now, what many Namibians don't understand is if I am sitting with the resource, why am I getting the short end of the stick? But you and I, we can articulate commercial investment. We understand. We know. You cannot debate on the money component or the money valuation component. You cannot run a black market right next to a formalized market in your country, because then you'd be working against the country.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, you'll be committing treason if people don't know this. If you are charging things in US dollar in your country, but you know you can't buy goods with US dollar.
Yeah.
You can't. You can only use South African rand. Any foreign currencies, you've got to go and exchange them at the banks. The banks have to give you the equivalent value in Namibian dollar to strengthen the Namibian dollar that way.
Look, when you look at the money side of things, that's why the discussion around money seems to be a very, not just money in general, but the institutions that manage money, especially your commercial banks. Now, your commercial banks are obviously, regulated more like, they are supervised, if you can say, by your central banks.
Yes, supervised.
Yeah, but here's the thing. When you look at a lot of central banks, especially in, in African countries and Western countries, the ownership of the central banks have a lot of obscurity to it. Who owns what? Like one of the biggest, one of the biggest discussion that I've ever come across when it comes to the South African Reserve Bank is who are the shareholders and who the heck are these guys?
Yeah, you'll never find that out about that bank.
Exactly.
And the American Fed.
This is actually the thing about, banking. It's very obscure. And that's because when you look at the ownership, take for example, we know that Namibia has a central bank.
Yeah.
South Africa has a central bank. The Namibian dollar is pegged to the South African rand.
Yeah.
And the South African central bank and the Namibian central bank, they have, they oversee a lot of different commercial banks. And now most of the, the commercial banks that are overseen by the South Africa, by the Namibian central bank, subsidiaries of the South African commercial banks.
Yeah.
So when you look at the central bank, the South African central bank is overseeing the activities of South African commercial banks.
Yeah.
And you see that this bank is on paper state-owned and has a lot
in spirit, Helmut. In spirit. Not even on paper. Because remember, Malema them, the EFF and the other opposition parties in South Africa, just after COVID, they were fighting with the ANC in parliament about the central bank's independence. Yeah. But the concern that emanated from there is that they weren't making a compelling story.
Oh, share that.
Okay, it's a website, Helmut. Okay, I'll share it now. They weren't making a compelling case. You know, in the broader scheme of things now, a sane thinking person.
Yeah.
Let me indicate here so that the listeners can see. A sane thinking person now motivates why they want something to be done. If I share with you, like we plan daily for our show, if I plan and I said, Helmut, let's look at the critical minerals discussion, because I wrote an article, which is not the only motivation, but yeah. I say that sentence and I motivate, hey, listen, Helmut, this thing recently happened. In order to still stay within the realm of the conversation for our topic and here on Eagle FM, let's look at this subject matter. And then you'll say, maybe, or you'll say, yes, Dwight, good idea. We looked at this yesterday, so let's follow on with the same particular theme in spirit, and then we continue. However, every time I've watched politicians, I'm not talking about the meek guys here in Namibia. Our guys are pretty well-mannered. Kudos to you, politicians. Every one of you, both the ruling party and the opposition guy, you guys are well-mannered. The South Africans
There's a Namibian who's on the floor right now.
Rolling.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So,
like, 1 minute, what are you talking about?
How can Dwight call us well-mannered? Well, look, guys, like Helmut reminds us every day, we don't have security guards, so I won't poke hyenas I don't know. Or I don't know where these hyenas will show up from out of the dark at night. Yeah. So yeah, the motivations that the opposition parties in South Africa provided for the central bank's particular sort of like direct ownership by the state was a point that they could not make, Helmut. A point that they could not articulate. Because the only reason that Malema relied on, because I only remember him being the most vocal about this particular point, was that Malema kept saying, but every other country I know of, even on the African continent,
yeah,
the central bank is under the direct control of the state. Meaning, it's the executive who obviously exert control over functionaries, i.e. that the central bank is a functionary of the state. Which is a very plausible idea, because here's the thing, Helmut. The thing administers one of your own three national identities. You've got the president, the national flag, it's actually four. It's your national anthem, the president, the flag, and your money. So an entity that administers the money must be state-owned. Please ask the Americans. And please,
believe me, I have come across documentaries after documentaries of Americans asking that very same question.
Yeah, and no one can motivate it to them.
Nope.
But I do understand the corruption of the British. Look, if you're telling me, well, it's because this side of London survived the great conquest William the Conqueror, then I know, okay, sharp, my bro. I was not there to verify this fact. Look, you were the only one who's got it in paper.
Look, when it comes to finding excuses, there's one thing that I like about colonial powers is that they
use information you can't prove.
They use not just information you can't prove. Most of it, you can just see that this information is well cooked out. take Cecil John Rhodes, for example.
Yeah.
Cecil John Rhodes, after he came across all the ruins of the, of Great Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
He attributed it to the Phoenicians because they were of Greek ancestry. They were more closer to white Europeans than they were to black people. The exact same nonsense you see about pyramids in South America were made by Mexicans, but the ones in North Africa were made by aliens. It's
somehow.
Exactly.
But the Mexicans are technically, what were the Mexicans? Aztec. Or with the Inca.
Yeah, you have the Incans and the Aztecs and Mayans, the Mayans, depending on which part of South America.
No,
yeah.
But the Mayans and the Incas were South America. The Aztecs were Central.
Yeah.
And the Aztecs were also the
Aztecs.
Have you heard of the story of Panama?
Aztecs were crazy. Like,
Have you heard the story of Panama?
Bananas? Which Panama?
No, Panama. The country Panama. Where the Panama Canal is.
Yeah.
When the Spanish landed there, they had him as a local guide.
Yeah.
And the guide had to ask, you know, where are all these people walking? Where are all these Aztecans walking? And then the guide asked one person that just walked past you. Because you come through the bush, apparently, that's the story.
Yeah.
You come through the bush, and all they see is just these caravans of people walking up and down.
Yeah,
like,
that's because
but there are no streets.
A thriving metropolis.
Yeah, no, there was no city. Think of it like a highway, but people walking.
When the Spanish showed up there?
Yes. And then the Spanish asked the guide, please ask these people, where are they walking? Why are there so many people walking up and down? Moving in both directions.
Mm-hmm.
This guy taps the one guy and asks him, hey, where are you going? And then the guy's response apparently was, Panama. Do you know what his answer is?
What does that word mean?
I'm over there.
Oh, Panama is over there. So they just decided to call the country over there. Seriously?
So based on that particular indicator, Ness,
yeah,
some of our countries might be accidentally named words that technically don't concur with any particular image of the country. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, the thing is, back to the money part.
Yeah. Back to critical earth.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Back to the money part and the critical earth. I think for a very long time, if you look at, colonialism in general and a lot of the statues that were, quote unquote, collected according to the British, but we know they were stolen. They were not collected, they were stolen.
Were kept in storage.
Yeah.
Held on for safekeeping.
Seriously?
Held on for safekeeping.
You stole it.
Do you know it's one of the...
What do you mean safekeeping? You stole it.
Do you know that I literally watched an interview, a Dutch interview.
Mm-hmm.
It was a... she's English speaking, but she interviewed a Dutch museum curator in The Hague or in Amsterdam, and she literally asked the guy, what do you think about this African drive now to request back their cultural
artifacts
and stuff that were taken during colonial periods to Europe?
During colonial.
I'm using the word taken because taken can equate to theft, because you just have to prove, did you ask permission, yes or no? And if the guys say, I don't know how it showed up here. Okay, then we can assume it's a theft. Because if you don't know, and there's no proof of the documentation that you just took it accidentally or you asked permission, then we can assume the other one. But anyway.
You know, the thing is, my problem is, if Tura Boys did that,
it would
demonize them.
Yeah, it's a direct.
I mean, it's directly. You know what? They robbed someone. You know, they took all their phones and all the.
They are the groceries. They are the embodiment of evil.
Evil. You know, they are bad guys.
Yeah, and then the Tura Boys are probably one of the biggest Christian believers that you might find. They might be Robin Hoods in the making. Not that I'm technically making you guys look good. I'll send you an invoice, but just don't pay me, ne?
No, look, my point is, it has more often been, associated to things like, take for example, a point of view.
Yeah.
Minerals, natural resources were useful to a lot of, native, whatever land they were native to.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just that they were useful in all kinds of different ways.
Yes.
Now, today we live in a world where technology is advanced to the point where we can use this in our technological equipment. And take gold, for example. Gold and silver is one of those things that basically made the Spanish Empire so rich. When Cortes showed up in South America and ran into, I think that was, the Aztec Empire was under Moctezuma at the time.
Mm.
Yeah. They had a thriving metropolis of about, 100 to 200,000 people. They called it, Tenochtitlan.
Hmm.
Now, here's the thing. They had their own, they had their own leadership structure. They had their own justice system and very, very, very scary rituals of separating heads and bodies. But
that could be for fish, even Almond.
No, the Aztecs or something else. But the thing is, when you look at the brutal traditional cultural practice. Every culture has those. Have you seen, just take for example, Game of Thrones? There, and you can just look at that and say, but you know, but the, you know, that, I mean, that's just a movie. The word witch hunt is literally coming out of Europeans.
Yes, Hamut, because it was someone's daughter who was too clever for.
If you were a woman and you could read, some demon possessed you. Now, if that was a cultural practice, old or new, associated with Africa, we'd never hear the end of it. But the thing is, it was in Africa. Translation, when it comes to historical questionable cultural practices, we all have skeletons in the closet. A lot of.
And some of them were like, we approved it. Maybe. It was community approved and community driven and community protected.
She should be hanged. Look, I watched it. I watched documentaries on the witch hunt in modern day Massachusetts. Back in the 16th.
Oh, you're talking about the Salem.
The Salem witch hunt.
Yeah.
People got executed because the judge was listening to a toddler's testimony.
Yes.
Some idiot had a dream that they were being witched. Now, imagine being a fully grown judge. Listening to someone that, you are now condemning someone to death, because someone had a dream.
Why does it sound like someone's girlfriend or your girlfriend trying to find out who
now you know,
who are you in love with?
Now, you know what?
Thank goodness I don't have those stresses.
Coming back, so basically when you, so that's, I think when it comes to the use of natural resources, every culture had their own use of the natural resources that was at their disposal.
Yeah.
The Industrial Revolution sort of like ramped up the hunger and the use of, of natural resources, especially, mined extractive resources.
Yeah.
And that's where you are seeing the, you know, this high demand for things like rubber. And the DRC now gets this very dark chapter under, Leopold. And, about, 10 to 12 million dead, but we can mention Leopold. 6 million dead in Germany. We can't mention Hitler. This is the problem I have with this language and all this kind of nonsense. But now, when you look at the the use of natural the use of minerals, I think they sort of like if you look at we have an iron age in our history as a species.
We have a copper age. We have a bronze age.
We have used all these things. But the thing is, Industrial Revolution sort of like brought up the ideas of using it on a commercial level, like no other civilization, at least that we have recorded or that we can read about, have used it before.
Yeah.
And now we are at that point where we are reconsidering the way that we basically exploit all these natural resources. We want to, we want to deviate from the more renewable sources of energy, because we know that, well, the resources are finite.
Yes.
And now we have just discovered that in our newly technological age, especially in our technological advancement in terms of electronic equipments, and not just in energy and transport, but basically everything electronics.
Yes.
And everything modern technology. The rare earth, it's in the name, man. The rare earth are even more useful. Now, if the non-rare ones are finite, what does that say about the rare ones?
Oh, no. That's why they're called critical, because of their existence, specifically.
So, they are, well, they are rare, and they are very useful, especially in, in terms of magnets. The two that are found in Namibia that, believe me, I cannot pronounce. And they are, which is why I added them on the description for everyone to basically bite their tongue, trying to pronounce it.
Which ones? I will read the description anyway. I would, you know it.
Okay.
Yeah. No, for me. But you were still saying something.
Those are. Hang on a second. Dysprosium, seriously, and dysprosium and terbium. Now these two.
Oh, did you read the thing that I sent you?
Momento. Now, these two are found in these two are found in Namibia, and they are used in magnets.
Yeah.
And magnets, you know, not just that, not to make magnets, but to make them steel magnets under extreme uses.
Mm.
Now, if you have done, if you remember your high school science, then you know that one way to destroy a magnet is to heat it. If you destroy a magnet, just heat it. Now, the thing is, if you are going to use something at extreme temperatures, and this is where your wind turbines and your electric vehicles, now comes in, the more you use something, obviously, the more it heats up.
Yeah.
That heat would destroy the magnet. Now, these elements sort of like, act in preventing that magnet from frying itself and more like impeding its efficiency in terms of use.
Mm.
The thing is, it's rare as heck.
I know.
And Namibia has it.
I know.
Now, hence the potential for us to participate in this industry, because we live in a time where we are in the middle of energy transition, and we are talking about these two elements are used in both electric vehicles. That's the mode of transport that is in line with the energy transition. It's part of the international, in terms of modes of transport, international climate change mitigation strategies.
Mm.
And when you look at the use of these two elements in wind turbines, it's also that wind turbines is generating energy using wind. That is also renewable energy.
Yeah.
So it's also part of our energy generation climate change mitigation strategy. So it's part of the overall energy transition. So the two elements that are rare as heck and are found in Namibia are used in both modes of transport associated with energy transition, with climate change mitigation strategy and energy generation climate change mitigation strategy. So you can see the demand here is a very clear one.
The demand is, Hamoud. I mean, remember when I told you the story last year of that place just outside Tsumeb, Abanap,
mm-hmm.
where 100 years ago they had a police station underground,
yeah.
and they had a hospital underground, and they had a railway track that connected Tsumeb and Grootfontein through this particular complex. The mineral that they mined there was a mineral used to coat steel, vanadium.
Oh, yeah.
Now, does that not also sound like Ray?
Vanadium sounds familiar because I've seen hardware equipment like like your handyman tools
the drill points and, your
vanadium.
Screws your screwdrivers they are coated in this mineral because the mineral helps to protect literally the steel part.
From reacting with the oxygen in the atmosphere and corroding.
Yes, or from protecting it from the wear and tear, continuous use wear and tear.
Yeah.
Now, people just need to think to themselves how many tools, pieces of machinery are being used daily, specifically around the world, and specifically how a mineral like this plays a particular part in daily use. Vanadium is still used, Helmut. It's not discarded. It's not like asbestos that was used in construction. And they realized, because you used asbestos in construction, unfortunately, this is causing some health issues for people who live in homes that were constructed with asbestos because asbestos gives off a fume. But many of these particular products, for example, like we started off with the Tsau Cape National Park. What was the other area that you wanted to mention? You said sausage flavor, but there was another thing.
There's one place that I have to find. It's somewhere in the northern region, the side of in the Kunene region.
Korejas. You mentioned it, Korejas. That's what he mentioned. The presentation was Tsau Cape, Speergebied, and Korejas in Kunene.
Yeah.
Now, who knows? And this is. Man, I should have been a geologist, Helmut. I should have been a geologist.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we obviously, for the broader discussions in Namibia to take place, we technically need to know, Helmut. What do we have? What do we have? Because the presentation obviously took place was a presentation that was conducted to us Windhoekers. Mm-hmm. We Windhoekers can't just go pick up a pickaxe and decide to go and smash open something in your backyard right there. Some of us actually rent, so we can't just smash open in someone else's backyard.
Yeah.
So discussions like these, because you sit there with an idea of what a critical rare earth mineral is, and just to hear from the Loftal guys that this thing is so critical that if you crush the rock that it is contained in, you might destroy the thing further. That's destruction opportunity one. If you know how to crush it properly, you can further degrade the deposit by sifting or filtering it improperly. So that's destruction opportunity two. And if you've achieved that level of safety, even meaning of recuperating the thing that you need to sell, you can, on a third basis, realize that what you technically have collected is of such poor quality, it's useless. You can't even sell it. That is destruction opportunity number three.
So translation, you need top level skills on how to extract it.
But how do you train that skills? How do you train that skills, Amor? Do you know what's the funny thing?
Yeah.
And this is also something I realized of. We have professionals in this economy, ne?
Yeah.
They will tell you one thing, ne? And for you sitting in that audience there at NAST, I was sat there thinking, how can you explain something like this to me, to a room full of people who technically have not seen a mine? And you were telling me, okay, there are three levels of potential ability where you will not be able to make money. Because the thing is so sensitive, hence why it's called critical or rare.
Yeah.
And the sensitivity is the main factor for its labeling. It's not because of its scarcity, because scarcity is a different discussion.
Yeah.
It's the fragility of the thing, where you have to go and look for the thing. But then I sit there thinking to myself, so why are you mining for the thing in the first place if you know that the opportunity of recuperating your investment, you are working on 1/3. 1/3 is your opportunity of recuperating, is 1/3 of recuperating your investment, Helmut. So for how long must you be mining? Well, I've dropped up. That thing that I shared with you just now.
Yeah.
That's the EU. It's the EU auditor's look. It's like the OAG for the EU.
You see, on the dysprosium element, it is rare, and it's in the name, the rare earth minerals. But there's one thing that's being pointed out here, that companies, according to the European Commission, there are a lot of companies that a lot of sources point out that the two elements, dysprosium and terbium, the two elements are useful in according to this 20 this one article here that Reuters wrote, where they caught our former mines and energy minister. This is from 2022.
Yeah.
That Namibia's brown mine mining experts in Essenberg rare earth minerals project to start production by 2026. On official then they go into just a bunch of all protocol observed type of nonsense. The Southern African country has significant reserves of rare earth in reference to Namibia, significant reserves of rare earth minerals such as dysprosium and terbium, which are needed for permanent magnets in the batteries of electric cars and wind turbines. The executive chairman of the privately owned Broadmind Mining, Sydney Martin, told Reuters that the company had started assessing the economic viability of the Essenberg deposits. Where is this? Which has
what's the closest?
No, I'm thinking it's the name of a place or the name of a project, which has which have inferred resources of 570 million tons of rare earth minerals, including neodymium and the praseodymium and yttrium and cerium. But 570 million tons. Now I'm reading this with Robin Schoeben's advice at the back of my head.
Mm.
Yeah, about private companies. Now, everyone is scrambling according to that company's chairman, the Bronmine Mining chairman. Everyone is scrambling for rare earth minerals to benefit the economies. With this resource, Namibia will become a critical player between two superpowers, America and China, who are the guys that are very involved in this rare earth mineral, you know, a business on a global scale.
Hamoud, can you spell that mine's name to me?
Broadmind.
Oh, Broadmind Mining. Okay. All right.
Now,
yeah.
Yeah. Now this is from 2022. China accounts for about 90% of global rare earth minerals, mineral output, and Western nations are seeking to diversify sources of the minerals. Now that I was not surprised to come across, and because this is
in the Ochotonjupa region.
It's in the Ochotonjupa region, not Pune.
It's Eisenberg. It's close to Kalkfeld.
Oh. Yeah, so now in October, I believe this was in 2020. Yeah, in October of 2022, Namibia's Mine and Energy Minister Tom Alwendo said the country had agreed a deal to sell its rare earth minerals to the European Union as the bloc works to reduce its reliance on energy imports from Russia following its invasion of Ukraine. So, There are two geopolitical, chaos that seem to be facing Namibia's direction in terms of trade here. You have, the whole geopolitical tension between Western countries and China, and you have the old, geopolitical tension happening between Western countries and Russia. Mm. For some reason, it's always Western countries and someone. Now we have Western countries and Iran. Western countries and...
No, it's still the same. It's still the same three. You saw almost what Trump did. Back in last week. He accused China directly after visiting Xi Jinping literally in the first 3 months of this year.
Mm-hmm.
He visited Xi Jinping. Now, you come up in July
mm-hmm.
after saying, no, he's an awesome guy, after flying back from Beijing.
Yeah.
You then decide in July to start throwing shots that way of saying, yeah, they were meddling in our elections back in 2020 and 2019, building up to 2019 elections, but there was no elections in 2019. But yeah, they were meddling. Yeah, and don't the Americans observe and meddle and run propaganda campaigns during other countries' elections?
Don't they have a whole budget on their campaign on China? So,
didn't one of their MPs, who's technically a senator, John Bolton, admit, yeah, we run?
So, are we still meddling in other countries' election? And that answer I found really annoying. And yum, 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 yum. It's like, what the heck is wrong with this guy? And look, this is a fully grown man.
Yeah.
And I think because of the daily exposure to not just the national but regional geopolitics, I've come to conclude that as much as you don't like the warmonger of all time, Henry Kissinger, pointed out that in politics you don't have permanent friends and permanent enemies. Mm. You only have permanent interests. In other words, permanence, interest triumphs everything in the world of politics.
Mm.
So you and I can be friends today, but if our, and that's because, you know, our friendship is determined by our alignment in interest.
Yeah.
If our interests are misaligned, we can become sworn enemies the next day.
Yeah.
And I find it fascinating because after I found out that, you know, Saddam Hussein was backed up by the Americans to overthrow his predecessor, and then they funded him to go to war with Iran. And fast forward to Operation Desert Storm in 1991, they are bombing the heck out of Iran, you know, out of Iraq. Like, well, what changed? And the same thing happened to Noriega of Panama. Remember?
On 3 January 1989.
Or 1990. They helped that guy destabilize, Nicaragua.
Yeah.
And fast forward to is it 1990?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fast forward to 1990, bro was hiding in the Vatican capital, in the Vatican, in embassy. Vatican embassy.
Yeah.
You know, and they had to DJ him out of there. And
with the worst music.
You gotta love Americans. Look,
with the worst music. And they decided 24 hours, you're not gonna sleep.
Yeah, I imagined, you know, just a few nuns and priests there going like Oga, president, or should we say former, from the look of things.
Yeah.
Now, we know that when life gets hard, you're supposed to run to the Lord. And he, but, yes, your sins are too noisy, man.
What happened to me? You know that when life went, you know.
Yeah, look, we know, we read the good book every day. We know that when life gets hard, you're supposed to run to the Lord. And we applaud you for doing exactly that. But
not in, under such circumstances.
Yeah, but the thing is, your sins, my brother, you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, so these ones are too heavy. So, again, the way I see it, there's a lot of geopolitical tensions that is basically pointed out by, well, the Reuters guys here. That a lot of Western countries, basically, it include North American countries, the US and Canada in this one, they want to diversify their, you know, not just the rare earth metals, you know, just everything, you know, everything, you know, all metals, rare and not rare, that are important in the use, you know, in their use for electronic components.
Mm.
And because, well, if they can diversify from China and Russia, then they can just, you know, just, well, compete with them without relying on them.
Yeah.
You know, for everything that they have to make. About 2 or 3 years ago, they found, you know, there was a part that was found, I think that was in the F-35.
Mm.
Which was traced back to China. And the entire American, you know, military industrial complex basically went bananas.
No, this can't be.
Yeah, but you have got to understand supply chain.
Here's the thing about the supply chain, Ahmed. The wrong people don't even understand the supply chain. Now, what I mean in this discussion of labels of the wrong people is that politicians don't understand supply chains. Politicians don't understand it. We've seen it with Brexit. That's why I That's why I talk about Brexit here on Eagle FM. It's not something that impacts Namibia in any way,
yeah.
But it shows specifically if you don't understand the subject matter, meaning you don't understand how intricate Namibia's trade is connected to SACU. Stop talking about divorcing yourself from SACU, but you're not even making your own underwear.
Yeah.
You invest in infrastructure that stands empty. Huh? We've got volunteer workforces, technically, who supposedly own
very good Namibians.
The inputs into Namibians. The factory. And no one knows who's in charge of the factory. You know, I know what country bumpkins do now.
What's that?
These guys on the rural areas, yeah. If whether you're from Rehoboth, Kitmans,
north, south, east, west.
I know what country pumpkins do. I'm calling them country pumpkins.
Country pumpkins.
Bumpkins.
Yeah,
that's the word. They like playing jokes. When we from the urban areas come, they think we are entertainment for them. besides obviously thinking that we might be like some sort of a prosperity project for them during, during holiday periods, because
let's go and chill, buddy. Yeah. From Windhoek, you must have money.
Yeah, always have money.
Believe me when I tell you, if he's from Windhoek, chances are very high he's broke as a heck.
Because Windhoek is expensive.
Yeah.
Jalakeni. But anyway, so they like making jokes with us, yeah? Specifically us urbanites.
Mm-hmm.
So now we show up back in the rural settings. Yeah, we're there to visit family, to try and relax. But then the family decides, you know what, let's have team building sessions and let the urbanites also help in plowing the field or tackling the resident pregnant goat or having to milk said resident pregnant goat for the morning milk in the pup. And then the situation is you get a blue eye because the goat just doesn't know you, it kicked you in the face, and there you go, voila. So you still become a butt end of the butt end of someone's jokes during that particular discussion. But when we have to look at serious discussions and serious talking points and serious elements, when we start dissecting the reports of like the standing committees, for example, of capital projects, I think that counselor was not serious, Helmut. He was probably in a different state of mind.
Oh, the one who said...
I won't assume they probably had taken some sort of a substance, because I don't know how you answer what project in my constituency or in my region. What project are you talking about?
You know, I think you know the good thing about supply chains when you look at it is that it draws a very fascinating picture of how things move from where the source minerals are mined to where they are processed to where they are manufactured into finished product to different components that they are made into and what these components become a part of.
Mm.
Yeah, take one of my favorite articles when it comes to minerals that I like to read came out of New York Times, I think, about a year or two ago.
Yeah.
They just asked one question. And the question was, can the world make electric vehicles without China? The answer was about 5-7 paragraphs of no. I mean, they could have just said no, but they had to go on and on and on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I like the fact that they went on and on and on because they were basically breaking it down. And this is just from electric vehicles. Forget wind turbines. Forget solar.
Mm.
Yeah. Forget, forget your fridges, your cell phones and, forget your cell phones, your laptops and all that. Just electric vehicles. They start from a battery.
Mm.
They list down all the minerals that you need to make an efficient battery for an electric vehicle.
Yeah.
And who dominates this industry from mining, processing to building, a finished product? About 40% of those and above are dominated by China. The short answer is no. You cannot isolate yourself and hate China and expect life to be easy for you to build an electric vehicle because it's not going to be easy. Now, basically for you to pull that off, you will need trade relations. Now, those trade relations means you'll have to get into legal agreements with the people that you are criticizing on a daily basis, even shortly after visiting them.
Yeah. Here's a concern, Amut. So I shared with you two links, ne? The one is like the European Union's auditing body. They call themselves the European Court of Auditors.
Yeah.
The first one is actually the same guys that were presenting at that discussion at NAST last week, that public lecture on critical minerals. But the first one I mentioned, the European Court of Auditors. So back in February this year, they brought out this report about critical raw materials for the energy transition for the EU. Now, this is just an assessment report that they did. Primarily, what they realized is that the EU needs to emphasize this diversification that you also mentioned. which is not just Canada. It's technically also what the UNIDO guys explained in the article that I wrote, guys, was technically also that Namibia also has to basically diversify. But
Diversification is good for everything.
Yes, it is. But I'm bringing us back to the question I asked you at the start after we finished the Magellan and the Drake's Passage discussion and the El Nino La Nina discussion. I asked you, Hamoud, what is your verdict from what you heard and what you read? I'm going to tell you my verdict. You didn't say yet your verdict. You didn't share anything.
Okay, just say yes, then I'll give you mine.
Okay, so mine is, it was predictable to once again see we us talking about the mining sector.
Oh boy, yeah.
The predictability,
I missed that one.
The predictability continues to disappoint me, meaning that even if you go look at the courses that we have at universities, Namibia's big three universities, IUM, NAS, UNAM. When you go look at these big three universities, and you look at the quantity of, or the amount of graduates that we release after they've successfully obtained their qualifications for every engineering course that these big three universities have, it still is too little to efficiently participate in the diversification discussion for Namibia.
Yeah.
You and I know already from the, what's the other, the UN Convention of Trade and Development, the guys that brought the report at the start of this year, that other report we did, the other diversification report.
On minerals or trade?
On minerals. They already said, look, there are low-hanging fruits that you're going to already achieve.
That you can exploit, yeah.
Yeah, from what you already have in the mining sector. But you and I know, from the NSA's employment statistics, the labor force statistics of 2023, mining employs one of the lowest. Where are Namibians employed the most? Agriculture and in the retail spaces of Namibia. I'll say it again. Agriculture. Where's this camera over there? Agriculture and retail. That's where Namibians are.
Not mining.
Not in mining.
Yeah, it's a...
It's a smidgen of a quantity. It's like this small.
You remember when we talked about the... was that the first or second oil and gas conference? And I kept taking us to what is Christensen, the Norwegian ambassador to South Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was the guy that presented via video con as well.
I like that guy's presentation because... One thing that he kept pointing out is what they have learned from the Dutch in terms of natural resources case, and what they actually had to go through for them to learn as a country. Yeah. And one thing that I think we haven't learned from that, not just as a country but as a continent, is we talk a lot about diversification, but We are always glued to the high return on investment that is associated with the extractive industry. So, the Dutch case disease, a lot of countries fall in Dutch case disease because they're dumb. Because the extractive industry has a very high return on investment. Because of that, it sees, again, not surprising, a lot of investors pouring in money. And that makes it more like the model of the day when it comes to business.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the resource is, again, like the good Norwegian ambassador pointed it out. The resource has a very high return on investment. Mm. But you have to constantly remind yourself that it's finite.
Yeah.
The Dutch forgot that.
Yeah.
And we ended up with that forgetting basically becoming a name with their country's name attached to it.
Yeah. They're the only ones not called after a negative label.
Exactly.
The Dutch curse.
Dutch curse.
Yeah.
So after they, after they discovered the resources, was that natural gas?
It was both gas and,
oil. So after they discovered those two, they decided to, now, what's one of the biggest mistakes they made? They, they tailored not just their industries but also much of their education system to feed that industry, which was based on a resource that was finite.
Mm.
So what happened was everyone now, because everyone wanted an iPhone with 2 SIM cards and a Vurpa, they decided to either
That the Vurpa has a critical.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they went straight. So they went. Actually, everyone,
they didn't have Vurpas back then.
Helmut. Everyone did. I know. Everyone wanted to look, and it makes a lot of financial and economic sense.
Yeah.
If there's an industry that is high paying, everyone will want to work for that industry. That's exactly what the extractive industry does.
Yeah.
That's what it did to the Dutch. Now, because everyone wants to work for an industry that is high paying, no one wants to work in other industries that cannot compete in terms of compensation, like your agriculture, produce or farming and processing. Now, as a result, you have a country that has all the arable land and all the agricultural viable land that are importing food. I mean, you have an industry that's based on a resource that has high return on investment. Why farm when you can just buy?
Yeah.
So after decades of buying, when that resource runs out, you realize that, we now have to retrain mining engineers to farm potatoes.
After they spent the whole time basically participating and engaging in this particular.
They have never seen grass in decades.
They probably have seen grass. They probably just did not know that now I've got to reorient to a blade of grass.
Yeah, so now you have farmers showing up with buckets of sunscreen because they've never been outside for a very long time.
Buckets of sunscreen.
And you have, now we're dealing with the farmers that are allergic to everything, including oxygen, because, you know, what happens is the more we,
which are the engineers,
the less we are exposed to Mother Nature, the more everything appears toxic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it works against you.
Yeah, it works against you.
Yeah.
And my favorite example of that is something that Anthony Fauci admitted just a few days, just a few years ago. In the early 2000s, medical experts in the U.S. started telling parents to, not to expose their children to peanuts because, after a few allergic reaction cases that were reported. So, parents decided to do what every reasonable parent will do if you give them, if you tell them that something is toxic for their child.
Mm.
They of course made sure that their child were not exposed to peanuts. What now happened was that lack of exposure to peanuts just increased exponentially the peanuts allergies.
Yeah.
Yeah. So because they were not exposed to it, the body did not know how to deal with it after they came across it.
Yeah.
Now Anthony Fauci comes up and he appeared on a podcast and he was asked, don't you think that, that was a terrible idea? In retrospect, because he's a doctor himself, and his response was, actually, yeah, it may have been a terrible idea because we told all the parents to keep their kids away from peanuts, yeah. And they did exactly that.
Yeah.
Now everyone is allergic to peanuts.
Yeah. Because no one was allowed to chew on a peanut.
Uh-huh. So the body does not recognize it as food anymore.
Because it's been moved. But they eat peanut butter.
No, there are those that don't eat peanut butter.
I know.
Yeah. There are those that are deathly allergic to it. They don't eat peanut butter.
I was just thinking about it because I've always wondered about this allergies, specifically about allergies to peanuts.
Uh-huh.
But before we continue, guys, we quickly have to take a short break. And after the break, we'll come back with the rest of the program here on your number one talk radio station. This is The Home Run. You're in our company, obviously. As you know, this is the drive time session specifically from 4 to 7. Every day from Monday to Friday. We'll be back right after this.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali hea hi nola natu heali bali no hea. Ile kongerewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye. Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
So we come back, dear listeners, there from the quick extended break. Once again, just to let you know where you are, where you find yourself, whose company you're in. This is The Home Run, and ultimately we are giving you or participating in the discussion. Okay, we are already automatically participating. Wrong English words. Apologies. In terms of the interest, the heightened interest that Namibia is experiencing, primarily because of the critical... I just want to get the label correct, guys. There's a difference according to the EU, the EU's court of auditors. They use two labels here. The one label is critical raw materials, and the other one is strategic raw materials, and the other one is just raw materials. They all are raw materials. And then there's obviously the rare earth scenario as well. Well, technically most minerals come from the earth, just so that you know. And they explain here, in terms of what they highlight here, and the source they get this from is from the ECA. The ECA is another European commission or another European body, which states there are two types of rare earth elements that are classified as separate critical raw materials, which are light rare earth elements and heavy rare earth elements. Some elements from both groups are combined into one single strategic raw material, which is sometimes called rare earth elements for permanent magnets. I mean, I was just highlighting to the listeners specifically the classification that is used. That link on that report that the Court for European Auditors cited, there's a little graphic identified as figure 2, which states raw materials cascade. And they explain that just below it, its little thumbnail or its little text in terms of its caption of text. Explains that there are the labeling that takes place. Now, in the graphic, you see raw materials, critical raw materials, and then raw materials. No? Strategic raw materials, critical raw, and then just raw. The three labels. But...
Strategic, critical, raw.
Wait. Say that again.
Strategic, critical, raw.
Yes. But you go from bottom.
Kind of difficult to say without adding on material. Let's not...
You go strategic, critical... And then raw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now it's raw material, people. It's raw material.
It's nonetheless, it's a raw material.
Yeah.
But.
Not any kind of raw. It's just raw material.
To avoid confusion.
Yeah.
Né? And that's also what the guy from the Namibia Critical Metals Incorporated company, the Loftal guy, what he presented was the two classifications that exist for these minerals. The first one is the rare earth elements which is classified as separate critical raw materials,
mm-hmm.
which it gives two sub-classifications within that classification, light rare earth
mm-hmm.
and heavy rare earth.
Yeah.
Remember, he explained that particular part. And the light rare earth is the one that's almost powdery. Mm-hmm. Where if you accidentally crush too hard, you demolished your product.
It's like eggs, but for mine.
But worse than the egg. The egg is in the rock. You have to break the rock to get to the egg.
Yeah, without breaking the egg.
Without breaking the egg. That's a nightmare. But yeah, so that's what they cite there. Now, they note in terms of, now I'm just adding a little bit extra in from this report that they cited here. They noted specifically that for a successful energy transition, the EU requires increasing amounts of critical raw materials. We, they're obviously talking about them as the Court of European Auditors, we assessed measures to secure their supply, such as diversifying imports, increasing domestic production, and improving resource management. We found that the EU faces an array of challenges. While the legislation sets a strategic course, its targets lack justification.
Yeah.
Importers' diversification has not produced tangible results, and bottlenecks hinder production and recycling. Well, the other graphic I shared with you that shows the menu of critical rare earth minerals that China sits with, and then you see everyone else is just playing in the scope of one or two. China sits with, what's that list? What's that list? Where's that list? Because this other thing, this report, has its own graphic. And this one, which is pulled from 2017, another EU review of critical raw materials. Mm-hmm. So China sits with 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 17. 17 rare earth minerals. And you get Thailand, just sits with one. Natural rubber. Rwanda, with tantalum, sits with one. DRC, cobalt, sits with one. South Africa has iridium, platinum, rhodium, and ruthenium. Russia sits with an abundance of palladium. USA sits with beryllium and helium. France sits with hafnium. Turkey sits with borate. And Brazil sits with niobium. But China sits with 17 of them.
So, in other words, when someone tells me that, China hates us, my question will be, why? For what? What do you have that they don't? Because they literally have all of it. Now, the thing is, every time that I look at that, you know, I just look at, especially from a natural resources standpoint, and, you know, and including wild, you know, mostly, and also wild animals.
Yeah.
The question I can is, you know, stop asking myself, maybe, I'm sure there's a historical explanation to it. What happened to, you know, to much of Europe's natural resources?
Isn't it probably already squandered, Helmut?
Oh, it's been mined for...
Remember the story that I told you about...
Millennia.
Do you remember the story I told you about rewilding that's taking place in the UK and in some parts of Europe?
Yeah.
So the Europeans now realized, as part of this global green initiative, greening doesn't just mean I have to go build a desalination plant to use seawater to supply for fresh water, because fresh water might be under strain because the urban population is growing out uncontrollably. Yeah. Firstly, there's a whole bunch of Africans migrating to me in Europe. And secondly, we're also having a whole bunch of more babies than we are, than what Earth is supposed to supposedly have. There's another report that came out apparently yesterday. I say apparently because I still have to go look it up. Yesterday or the day before, in terms of the population spread on the planet.
Population spread?
Meaning how many people technically are on the planet's surface, whether it's natural or unnatural.
Yeah.
And the hypothesis or the answer that that particular report suggests is it's unnatural for there to be so many people on the planet. But that sounds very similar to the harebrained idea that Elon Musk has had. The other harebrained idea that his best buddy, Peter Thiel, and his other buddy.
A good example of anything social advice. But the thing is, if you look at the direction that we are headed,
a lot of developed countries are going to have some serious population issues by 2050.
Mm.
Because, you know, you're looking at the, I mean, you have countries like South Korea, Singapore, and you have basically, you know, all, most if not all developed countries have, you know, you're looking at the replacement rate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because what you want, you know, you want a large youth population and you have, and a small adult population.
Yeah.
Because the youth population, that's your workforce. Now, when your workforce are basically running, you know, they're the ones that are going to be running your economy to take care of their elderly once they go in retirement.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you have a dwindling youth population and a growing adult retiring or near retirement population, what you are looking at is a pressure that is now left in a very small workforce to feed that growing, retired population.
Yeah.
Which is a terrible idea for any country. Now, that's a problem that, countries like Singapore are basically dealing with. And South Korea, throw Japan in that bucket.
Throw China in.
Yeah, throw China in that bucket.
People don't know that China is also technically at a stagnation of its own population replacement rate.
The thing about China,
The U.S., let's not just pick the obvious targets.
Just the West, yeah.
The U.S. is also part of it.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I found, at least one of the historical contributing factor that I found interesting about China was during their one-child policy,
yeah,
a lot of people preferred to have a boy because of cultural influence.
And plus, and in India, it was China and India.
So it was preferably a boy. So a lot of people preferred boys. So yeah. At the end of the day, you now have more men than you have women. Now, that is not good.
Yes. And then they realized why the couples were preferring more boys over girls. For example, you and I know getting pregnant. Okay, we as men, on record, we technically can't get pregnant. Just so that you know. But
and thank God for that.
For that disclaimer.
Uh-huh.
Okay, not the thanking God, Helmut. We're not rubbing pregnancy in the face of women.
No, I'm looking at anatomy here. Believe me. Plus, believe me, ladies, if men fell pregnant, doctors in the hospital will need earplugs.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with that.
They're crying in there.
That's just the worst picture to have in my head right now. But yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that trauma. Yeah. So the concern that they also realized when they did that research was that, especially in India, the couples, if they discovered, because it's a lottery getting for fall pregnant,
yeah,
because you don't know. You technically don't know. It is literally the worst of the worst kind of lotteries. When these couples realized in the 90s, in the early 2000s, in the 80s, that it was a baby girl that was born, meaning the pregnancy is already successfully concluded. Yeah. The infant child is killed.
What?
Yes. And then they try again to get a boy.
Killed by who?
By the parents, Helmut.
Why?
You just answered the question. Because they wanted a boy. Why did they want a boy? Because in these two particular populations, they realized that boys, meaning men, sons, were the avenues of getting out of poverty. That was the answer. That is still the answer. You'll still see it in Africa as well. Even though in some scenarios, you know, the pregnancy, you know, we just accept.
Because medieval Europe, give me a son. You know, King Henry VIII type style.
Yes, and if the woman didn't perform, King Henry then made up charges in terms of, yeah, she's cheating on me. I just need to, you know, she just needs to get out of my sight. Just get her up. Go lock her up. And then it's your own... Then it's your own 10-year-old daughter that you're locking up in a tower.
Yeah.
That's what happened to Elizabeth I, by the way.
Just gave birth to a daughter. Like, you know what? I wanted a son, so I'll just lock her up at the age of 12. Father of the year, ladies and gentlemen. Father of the year.
Just letting you guys know.
One guy said on social media that, well, ladies, you've got to be specific when you ask a man to treat you like a king. Mm. I mean, like a queen. You know, he's your king and you're the queen. You have to be specific, like, which king? Because as a story, history buffs, I can tell you, not all kings were the kings that you want to be around.
Well, the kind of characters that they were,
yeah,
is not people that you want to know in real life. Absolutely. In real life, you don't want to know them. You don't want them anywhere close to you. Plus, you know, the protections of having a police force and police officers and, you know, just basic social structures that help with coordinating and navigating life every day.
Yeah.
That was a completely different time back then. I mean, the police force is even a modern idea. I think in many countries since 1900, the police became like a needed, necessary, existence. Technically, to fight crime,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to using the army to fight crime, because the army would just go and assume, all of you guys standing there, you are just guilty, and you're like, but for what? We don't care. You are just guilty. You are just arrested. Yes, it might seem that arrest rates would look impressive, but actually dealing with the crime doesn't mean anything.
Not easy.
Yeah.
Now coming back to the rare earth minerals type, you know, side of the of discussion, there is something that I would like you to read. Just one sentence.
With the EU guys or with the Namibia critical minerals?
That's a different source. As of 2026, in terms of. They were just looking at the prices for, you know, just how expensive the, you know, the rare earth metals are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here we go.
What? Am I reading it or are you reading it? Oh, reading this one.
Yeah, just the second paragraph, just the first line.
Okay.
The first and second line.
Okay. So, as of March, this is the Crux Investor under the heading is the price environment structurally favors non-Chinese producers. So as of March, the 10th of March this year, terbium oxide traded at $803 per kilogram on China's domestic market and $1,182 per kilogram free on board China. The FOB, that's the other particular thing. Now the FOB price will still understates the true premium available to the verified non-Chinese producers because as of late 2025, dysprosium and terbium from non-Chinese sources were commanding 3 to 4 times Chinese quoted prices in European and Western markets, reflecting government willingness to absorb premium costs for strategic autonomy in critical mineral supply chains. So, critically, China's MOFCOM, that's no pun, no derogatory term intended, guys, please. China's MOFCOM, MOFCOM, Ministry of Commerce, that's what it implies, announcement number 18 of 2025, which added terbium, dysprosium, samarium, gadolinium, lutetium, scandium, and yttrium to its export control framework, has not been suspended and remains permanently within China's dual-use items control list, even as some other restrictions were temporarily paused following diplomatic engagement. Now,
there was a diplomatic tensions.
I think that's why Ursula von der Leyen was also there in the first half of the year.
Yeah.
She and her delegation. Because we never know, Helmut,
mm-hmm.
why did people fly there?
We do know.
We don't actually know. They say it's to salt, you know, to mend or to strengthen or to just, you know, go and, how's it, but how you doing, man? Just to check up on you.
You know, that's the interesting part of the relationship between politics and economics.
Yeah.
Because diplomacy is needed, but diplomacy is there to cement economic relations.
Yeah.
That's it. Your public representatives, every time they travel, wherever they go, the goal is to establish political relations, diplomatic relations. So, but at the end of every type of negotiations that they are negotiating is entities or companies of both in both countries to trade with one another.
Yeah.
At the center of all diplomatic relations must be one thing: trade relations. That's all.
Mm.
That's as old as time.
Yeah.
So when you look at war, for example, pretty much every war that you look at is associated to one thing:
minerals
or
resources.
It's resource based, and the soldiers that are fighting that war don't mine the resources after it's secured. The politicians that are sending those soldiers don't mine. It's a private company that shows up from that country to mine that particular resources.
Mm. It'll always be about resources, Helmut.
Yeah.
It'll always be about resources. To listeners out there, if you want to contribute, participate, engage, you know what the studio number is, 083-288-401. We can always listen and accommodate to what you want to add.
Mm-hmm.
Just before we reach the next 10 minutes, we're actually going to take a quick live read. We're going to come back and we're going to get into the rest of the conversation here on the Home Run here on your number one talk radio station. Velvita University for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs: Certificate for Enrolled Nurse Midwife or Accoucheur Level 6, Certificate in Pharmacy Level 5, Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6, Bachelor of Social Work Honours, Bachelor of Nursery and Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8, Master of Public Health, and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvita University, where everyone is an achiever.
So, coming back to the terbium oxide, that's one of those rare earth minerals that are found in Namibia.
Yeah.
The one that is having that ridiculous price of $803 per kilo.
That makes it at almost 14,000.
Per kg?
Yes, Namibian dollars.
Jeez.
Yes. It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then per kilogram, you break that up into how much is needed, which is usually sent in tons. What is a ton, Helmut? 1,000 kilograms.
Don't we just send, dirt?
Yeah.
Geologists, 100 years from now, be like, we don't know how this sand, which is...
So this is 803, ne? Times 17 Namibian dollars.
Holy cow.
This is the exchange rate. Now, if you times that by 1,000 kilograms, which is a ton.
A ton, yeah.
Just a ton would give you 13 million.
Whoa.
13 million of dirt.
That's when it's refined. Not when you send it through Lubito Corridor unrefined.
True.
I don't think that, it costs that.
And technically, this is what it is. Divided by 17, the exchange rate, it's 803,000 US dollars. That's per ton, per 1,000 kilograms. Just letting you know, Helmut.
And that's a lot of money.
Yes, it is a lot of money. Yes, it is.
According to the European Commission, a lot of companies that use these metals, especially those ones that are used to strengthen or more to strengthen the or to make the use of to make these magnets work efficiently, they are trying to diversify from using that metal to something else that is affordable and maybe not even less rare. And when I came across that, the first thing that came in my head was like, oh, we have another natural versus artificial diamond
situation.
Situation here.
Yeah.
I think this is the thing with the extractive industry, right? Because scientists are always working, looking for the most efficient, alternative to whatever it is that's already in use. And you have, companies that use this, that process, or more like they need this for the final product of in terms of making parts of their, of whatever it is that they produce. They are always looking for something that is cheaper and easily available.
Mm.
So they will, sooner or later, they will come up with something new. So, when I came across this, the first thing that came in my head was, we now have three industries.
Mm.
The oil and gas industry, we have the diamond industry, and we have the rare earth metal one, which is seems to be gaining momentum.
Yeah.
So both these three are facing a very fast replacement. Diamonds and our natural diamonds have artificial diamonds to contend with.
Yeah.
And you have oil and gas industry have green hydrogen to contend with. And you have the rare earth metals that where you have scientists and engineers, or basically especially the scientists, are working on the better alternative forms in terms of efficiency.
Mm.
And the commercial guys are looking for one that is not just easy to find, but also maybe works even better. But in the commercial world, they are always looking at affordability.
Yeah.
So whatever it is that we have to do, we're going to have to do it fast.
Which is what, that is
the thing is, there's no we in these things. We are just, to borrow your word, in spirit. We are in spirit, both in diamond, oil and gas, and rare.
We are team players.
You know, you got this.
Go team. Uba alles.
But until then, we have, the UN guy seems to have made their assessment and have basically came to tell us that you have that magic word, the potential to participate, to play with the big boys in the world of rare earth minerals. And the big boys in this case really are the big boys that also don't like each other. In this case, the US and China.
Mm. There's nothing we can do, Hamoud.
As
Namibia. Nothing we can do.
You can use the tension between the big boys like a kid would use the tension between the parents that are divorcing. You just go to parent number one.
But you saw almost what happened at the World Cup final. Donald Trump didn't even want to get out of the photo because he believes he has to be part of the World Cup celebrations as Spain was lifting the trophy. So how do you deal with a man like that?
And Argentina just had to embarrass themselves like that.
Well, of course. Well, everybody was waiting for it. Everybody was betting on Spain to do it.
And the support fell right behind Spain, and people started reading the history of Argentina for some reason.
It came up even with the last World Cup, the World Cup that they beat, was it France in or the Netherlands in the final? The concern there was people went on a weird tangent on the internet in terms of why don't you see any black people in Argentina?
Yeah.
But we also have to understand, South America is a place where a lot of atrocities have happened.
Okay, that's the second thing you have to understand. The first one is a bunch of guys that escaped Nazi Germany. That's where they went. What do you expect?
No. I'm still before 1900.
Uh-huh.
I'm not even at 1945.
Yeah.
You know? Because the understanding in terms of that people try to ask the question of why can't Argentina fix its own economy in terms of why does it constantly go back to the IMF and the World Bank for more bailouts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's because when you look at history, Argentina was supposed to be on the level of South Africa and Australia, but it's Brazil that's on the level of South Africa and Australia.
Yeah.
Brazil is actually in the Southern Hemisphere itself.
Yeah.
Even a more stronger, resilient economy than South Africa and Brazil and Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I think, I think Australia is just a structural issue. It's a government structural issue. I think the same thing can be said about South Africa and pretty much every African. I had no idea how rich
Australia is when it comes to natural resources. And there are a lot, you know, a lot of people do this comparison. There's one Australian guy. I'm not sure if that guy is Australian or is from Alaska.
Yeah.
Like to do this comparison between Australia and Alaska.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he liked to point out is how Alaska uses its revenue from natural resources to benefit everyone, including that, you know, end of the year, basically.
No, it is,
know,
that thing. It is that thing.
That is found in in Alaska.
Mm.
At the end of the year, as long as you did not commit a crime and you are, you know,
you can prove that you've been there for 6 months.
You can prove that you have been there. You can prove your citizenship and all that. You are eligible to get this amount of money.
Yeah,
but they don't have near the natural resources that that Australia has.
Yes.
Now, instead, what Australia has is train tracks after train tracks that leads to the port.
Yeah, and roads that just lead to the port.
Why does that sound familiar?
Like Africa.
Exactly.
Yes. That's the story that I told you also about the Pantas Politics guys, the teacher that decided to go and sponsor a lobbyist. It was his idea.
So he just wanted to figure out, like, what the heck is going on.
Let me play your game. If you are sponsoring lobbyists, let me also sponsor a lobbyist. And then he did the crowdfunding. And then, voila.
I think, you know, playing their game is requires you first to study the rules of the game.
Yeah.
And then figure out the loopholes. Because everything has loopholes, believe me.
Yeah.
Everything has loopholes. If it's written in words, it has loopholes.
It definitely is.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, that was Malaysia with the Don raid.
Mm.
Yeah. What did the Malaysian government do at the time? They even hired one of the Rothschild boys. You know, the banking dynasty.
You're not serious.
It was a whole crew that they put together. To make sure that by the time that the London Stock Exchange opens,
yeah,
we're in there, and we have bought, before everyone wakes up to the reality of what's going on at Guthrie Limited, we are the majority shareholders. And they did exactly that. When I tell you Margaret Thatcher panicked the heck out.
No, it's good. No, it's really good what happened there.
She panicked like crazy. You see again the link here between private entities and politicians.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Margaret Thatcher went bananas. And when I was reading this, I was like, was she a shareholder in this company? I mean, they owned a large chunk of plantations in Malaysia.
Mm.
The Malaysians kept sort of like being diplomatic and asking all kinds of positive ways.
Please give us our land back.
You know, give us our land back.
How does pretty a much foreign company own so much land?
So the British, being the British, well, just decided to say no.
Nani.
Yeah, you know, let's follow this, this land act. Let's follow this plantation act. The Malaysians were like, okay, you want to play? Mm. Let's do this.
We can both play this game.
They beat them at their own game.
Yes.
And believe me when I tell you, they have sealed every hole that the Malaysians used. You'll have to find your own.
That sounds so wrong, Hamut. That sounds wrong.
Oh, no. I didn't even go there. Oh, man.
If you said sealed all the gaps, but yeah, don't worry. We're still in a safe space.
English will be the end of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. Obviously, as we now get into the last hour for today's show.
Hang on a second. So that means we have got to stop, you know. Okay, we have got to start studying the rules of everything that we would like to participate in.
Hamut, that's why I've been saying, where does the resource go? Where's the resource bought and sold?
Yeah.
Not where the resource is mined.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it bought and sold? So if Namibia was clever,
yeah,
Namibia brings.
Hey, why do you say it like that?
Because we're not clever.
You make it sound like we are.
Do you know from this workshop that I came from? This climate, no, this thing that I've been attending since yesterday. This workshop I came from. I asked today was a legal. There was a legal presentation. I asked the person, because she is a lawyer. So people love using uis in the examples about modern day disputes in this green energy transition and the green hydrogen discussion.
Quote, unquote, illegal lithium mining.
Not just that, but also because close to Uis is where, I don't know how far the Daures Green Hydrogen Project is from the town, because Uis is also classified as a local authority now, has been. Remember the State of the Nation address?
Yeah.
The president mentioned this. Uis will be now classified as a town in a communal land area. Now, the reason why I added the communal land area on top of this is, what do you find in a communal land area, Helmut? Societal structure. What do you find?
The village.
No. Yeah. Go further.
Go
further.
Okay.
Why did you say
subsistence farming?
No. A traditional authority.
That's a no-brainer.
What did we find from that Uis lithium mining report? Who was at fault, basically, for the inconveniences that the local residents in and around Uis were experiencing, which were unrehabilitated mining sites, poor communication, as well as lack of access to information about the developments happening in and around their settlement and in and around their particular life where they live. From that discussion, who were the main culprits?
Traditional authorities.
Yes. Now, every time people are talking about the community, the community, the community, and then all I do, I'm not Inspector Gadget or Sherlock Holmes, just to let you guys know. I'm not that person. Mm. But usually a train of thought of sanity and level-headedness, all you have to do is ask for distinguishing facts, facts that you will not find anywhere else in the country, which is just associated to this scenario. All I ask them is, where is Uis based? Oh no, Uis is in Irongo. Yeah, but where is it based? Is it a town, a municipality with commercial farms around it?
Mm.
Or is it in a communal land area? And they all go like, it's a communal land area. Okay, what is your number one roadblock? A traditional authority.
You know, now that you brought that up, you know how the African Union have that, panel of the wise?
Oh.
I think, look, they came up with it.
Yeah, it's their label. I know it's their label. I know.
Panel of the wise.
Yeah.
I laughed for an hour after reading that.
Yeah.
But, panel of the wise, you know, supposed to, they are, you know, spearhead safety and security on the continent, which we all know they failed miserably. Mm. They had to push silencing of the guns from 2021 to 2030. Now, everything is about communication.
Yeah.
Especially administrative things. Communication becomes very important, which is why, you know, the two examples that I gave yesterday of the Minister of Agriculture in 2021 and Minister of Works and Transport in 2016. Mm. Yeah. You know, because every time I look at that, the first thing that comes in my head is what level of communication is going on here?
Mm.
Because as a minister or a president, or, a director or traditional authority, whatever position you find yourself in.
Mm.
Personally, I don't expect you. I don't know everything. I don't expect you to know everything.
Mm.
But if you are in a position where you are leading a group of people, like a traditional authority, president, minister, you're supposed to, you literally have these people that are your advisors on everything, whether it's, you know, on every decision that you make. Like, that miscommunication that you pointed out, for example, which is...
No, I call it lack.
Yeah, the lack of communication that came from, basically central to the Parliamentary Standing Committee report on the quote unquote illegal lithium mining.
Yeah.
Yeah. All those things were very, from the traditional authority standpoint and Minister of Mines and Minister of Environment, that is miscommunication on a lot of levels.
Yeah.
First of all, you have a company that operated and then did not decommission the holes they were digging. And then domestic animals kept falling, and you know, a lot of local residents were now pissed because they, you know, they were now carrying the cost of the Ministry of Environment and Ministry of Agriculture, Ministry of Environment and Ministry of Mines lack of regulation.
Yeah.
Because it was up to the Ministry of Mines to ensure that when the company that was operating the prior was leaving, they were supposed to be there to oversee, you know, all, they were supposed to make sure that decommissioning was done properly.
Monitoring, so, and
evaluation. Yeah, obviously the guys that just picked up their bags and left. And if you ask me, if it wasn't for, you know, if it wasn't for the, for those, you know, for those domestic animals falling in there, and the two companies, one local and one Chinese,
yeah,
operating in there, I don't think we would have known that there was decommissioning that was not done
properly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Not done.
Yeah. That's how we found out.
Yeah.
Now my question is, if it wasn't for that company, I think I don't think we would have found out. Now the question now that comes out of there is, how many, you know, how many mining operations, big or small, that we don't know about, that you know, were decommissioning, was not done. We know that the last time I checked, we have about, what, 200 and something unrehabilitated mine. Mm. It always comes back to regulations.
Yeah, and communication, yeah, and enforcement, and being present. David, obviously welcoming you. Let's switch on your mic. Welcoming you. How are you doing?
No, I'm well. Thank you for having me.
No, we're always like having you here, David.
I'm your guest. Yeah, but take that out of the picture. It's a very interesting conversation,
yeah,
especially things that are very closer to my heart. I'm more interested, apart from tracking of progress of development, natural resources,
yeah,
particularly the rare earth minerals, mm-hmm, and also critical minerals.
Mm.
It's quite a very important conversation, but I always have a question to say, when countries have expert in this, in these industries, when they come to Namibia, at what level are we keeping up, especially knowing and understanding, you know, especially what is beneath our land? And also to build on the conversation that you guys have already, embarked on, particularly looking at, the regulations, what level of, you know, how do you get information regarding accountability, particularly in the mining sector? You look at the case of 2024, there is a certain mining company, which name definitely people know, it's not going to be mentioned, which was caught doing illegal mining instead of exploration. Then due to the pressure of the public, or I don't know if it has always been like that, the directors were summoned. But after that, you really do not hear what really happened behind those closed doors, if there were someone to come. And if you are also asking to say what level of punishment were these people given, regardless of their reputation, and is it really true that the management of that mining sector, I mean that the mining company, which did not use its license, which was supposed to be just exploration, started mining. How many of these things are not reported, and what is happening behind those closed doors? And so it's a question of also to say, are those mining companies that we are in you know, business with really respect us? Sometimes it's not a matter of having a pride, but it's also a matter of respecting and understanding what is happening.
Yeah. It's.
I hope you're not getting arrested. He didn't hear that.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. it's a good point that David leaves us on, Helmut, because it focuses on a question in terms of a question that was asked during the Namibia EU Business Forum in the masterclass sessions before the forum actually kicked off the Tuesday. The Wednesday. The question was asked by, during the questions and answer session, by a South African guy who was present there, because I could hear from his accent, you know, he sounded very South African.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the person asked the question in terms of what countries does the EU love to work with? And the respondent, the guy that was the MC for that session of the, was it on the critical rares? No, it was the one on the CBAM discussion, the legislation and so on, impacting legislation and so on. He basically responded by saying, okay, what kind of countries the EU is preferential to work with or prefers to work with are countries that shares the EU's values. Now, let me flip that thing that you just explained, David.
Oof. Yeah.
Let me flip it on its head. And I'm going to ask you in this scenario.
Yeah.
And now it's a conversation Helmut and I have had since 2024 when we started doing the Home Run Together, where we asked, everyone else has a plan for us.
Yeah.
What is our plan for everyone else?
No, we don't. We don't.
No, to be fair, we have a plan.
No, we don't.
I do like the honesty of my colleagues.
No, we don't. We don't have a plan.
We have a plan. Our plan is to wait for someone to come and give us a plan.
You know what is very interesting is that when we are here, people are studying about Africa. Wherever you go, there are, you know, sections and also the studies about Africa.
Yeah.
People have a plan about us. Somebody can come here and in 2 years, the person can speak fluent Afrikaans than you or fluent Oshiwambo.
Yeah.
It means that there is already a hands up and they know how to deal with us. The question is that...
Actually, that's true.
The question is that do we really have a plan, especially to stand as sovereign state is an overused word, just to say as equals. Mm. Because even that which we call our real friend, there is always an area where they are saying, no, I think Namibia a bit far. How on earth you start mining, for example, if you are not given the permission to mine? What other things did you do?
Before
you were caught? Because one thing that people look at is that a criminal is not always only somebody who is caught.
Yeah.
There are those who got away with it. And how if we have to look at how much of our resources were taken illegal, particularly post-colonial Namibia. But the question that you ask is a very good question to say, do we have a plan about other people? Do we have a game plan on how to deal with other people? Or when people are saying, no, Namibia is going to become a global hub. Mm. The same thing they are telling South Africa, the same thing they are telling Botswana, the same thing they are also telling Angola and other countries. If you are sitting in Namibia,
you look from outside in, you look from inside out.
Yeah. Then you also look at, I don't want to say diplomats, but representatives of other countries, the way they deal with us, you think you are the only one in Africa.
You feel so special.
There is always this thing when you go to even Namibia is a beautiful country. It's going to become a global hub in terms of
the flattery is over the charts.
Yeah. Listen to what they speak about Gabon. It's the same thing they speak when they go to DRC.
Look, that's exactly what I'll do.
Yeah. But what is also interesting is that, your question is still relevant and it's a question that everybody should ask also to say, in engaging with somebody, it's not only about researching on how to deal with an individual or how to deal with a certain company.
Yeah. It's also about a country.
Yeah. It's about understanding understand the people that you are dealing with. I've been telling people to say, not to go directly to anybody. When there are chaos, you guys always speak about this international institution, particularly what they do with other countries.
Yeah.
If they are not doing it with you now, you are not special. You just did not come to that point.
Yeah.
It's the same with mining, the same with, oil and gas, it's the same with even green hydrogen.
Yeah.
In other countries where you have cases of international corporations not complying with laws of other countries, they are the same international corporation we're into business with. But the question is that, are we careful? Do we understand where they are coming from and what they do? You know, reports have been given. Look at the African, report on Africa security studies. They have done a lot of research about this thing. What contribution international institutions have in either is violence or either in the black market and all these things.
Yeah.
But the mining part is very important to say, are we ready? Are we competent? And we have a plan. That is still a question that, we should continue asking ourselves, not only for the sake of discussion, but for the sake of practicality, really, because I will not be happy. You are telling me to say every, the person is our friend and all these things. But
yeah,
looking at, I was doing my research, especially today, looking at rare earth minerals and critical minerals. Then you start seeing this name that I cannot even pronounce. And you're asking yourself, so these things are in Namibia. They are used in EVs, they are used in planes, they are using what.
And they are, there are large deposits of them in two places. The one, you as a Namibian, you can't even have an accident on that road. Then you get told, hello, move on.
You can't realize you broke a few legs, but you're not supposed to be here.
You're not supposed to be there. You're supposed to be just continuously moving.
Do we even know, do we even know these things? Our students who are studying mining engineering or even artisans, do they know these things? And where are they going? Oh, we only speak about gold and diamond and uranium.
No. How it gets spoken about is diamonds are here.
Yeah.
Now, every time I ask the question, why are we talking about a diamond if Namra is collecting a lot more money that Namibia can use for its development? But we are being told every at the start of every financial year for the government at the budget unveiling, diamonds didn't perform so well. Okay, yeah, so what? Why are you mentioning diamonds didn't perform so well?
Well, because well, for Namra to collect, the diamond must perform.
But that's from from a couple of companies. That's like a 0.00 nothing percentage. The amount of companies in the diamond operation, Helmut, in the diamond whatever diversification element is like a 0.001 percentage. But where the most Namibians are employed is where you find the most money circulating in the economy.
You know, it's quite unfortunate to see the discussion, especially the discussion of mining, where you have the aspect of economic contribution to mining. We praise so much the mining sector, which is quite good. But when you look at the contribution of the mining sector to our economy, it's still less compared to other fields. When you look at unemployment and all other things, it's still less. And looking at... looking at BON today, they released a statement on the financial status of Namibia. But looking at our growth and looking at the things that were supposed to push us, you start realizing that we are still at the discussion stage. If we our real GDP grow by 2% at this time, you are asking yourself, what is really happening?
Okay, first of all, those are the things we should start explaining in Rukwangari, Shuambo, Lozi. Because okay, let's say our country take a statement like that coming from is it Bank of Namibia?
Yeah, BON. Yeah,
yeah. Our GDP has grown to this level. Now, look, for me, it's about breaking it down to an ordinary Namibian. What's that mean?
Is it only in terms of numbers and what sectors?
Exactly. Not only do you have to explain the technical meaning, but it's a social implication in terms of how it's changing my life as an ordinary Namibian.
And that is not a growth that is expected. Do you know that we are in the continent of Africa, even countries that and I always mentioning this to say even countries that have wars. Even Sudan is performing better than us. It's true.
It is.
Zimbabwe is performing better than us.
And they just have oil, no? Sudan.
South Sudan.
Yeah, South Sudan has oil.
No, they're performing better than us. Other countries that we used to see on TV, people go in the line and, line for food from international organizations. In terms of their economy, they are performing. In terms of their infrastructure, you see. But if we were in the game of football, we are defending, we are the last man standing in the defender of Namibia economic, when it comes to economic development. And also to look at the aspect of saying, let's get away with the numbers.
Yeah.
Let us not get angry with the statement coming from Bank of Namibia, which is a true fact. Let's go into details to say, apart from numbers, because numbers did not help us for quite a very long time because of the structure of our economy. Then you ask yourself, what really happening?
Yeah.
And, if you speak about tracking of progress, we are already 2 years. I don't want to say 2 years. We are behind with one year, 6 months looking at the implementation of NDP 6 requires 6% growth for us to get where we want to get into. But the last year we grow with, is it 2%? I know it's less than 3 in the last quarter. But maybe we are getting there.
And David, just for you to round out that sentence.
Yeah.
What was the leading sector that the growth is attributed to?
Yeah, I think it's agriculture sector is one of them.
Yeah.
But in most cases, when you speak about agriculture sector, you speak about seasonal production.
Yes.
The mining did not perform very well when you look at it as it has been. And the product of value addition is not coming out from this. Maybe, you know, I'm somebody who is very positive, but I am a realist to understand, to say, if we really want
value addition,
we must start not only at the conversation level, but we must start at the practical level. If you want value addition, this thing of nuclear bill was supposed to attract all the young people in Windhoek to come and attend, all the industries to come and attend and to understand, to say, where is Namibia going?
Mm.
When you speak about the drafting of a nuclear bill, for example. But how can you add value to people that the only thing nuclear bill is about making bombs and uranium only?
Or like what Anacleta discovered in Rundu, where they asked her, what does this thing do to my life?
Yeah.
Look, this is what I'm saying, in terms of the use of language of words like GDP. You have got to explain it. Otherwise, you will just keep running into questions, into people asking you questions like, okay, what is green hydrogen? Is it literally green?
Why is it called green hydrogen?
Yeah, why is it called green hydrogen?
Yeah.
And this is not just because you are dumb or something.
Yeah.
But, we are in the world of science here.
Yeah.
And, some of us are not Albert Einstein.
Mm.
And now you are talking about, take for example, rare earth metals.
Yeah.
They have names that sound like, they were, someone got them from a kindergarten playground. Maybe it's just a rumbling and someone got names from them.
They wonder if they're even in the, what is this thing that they give us in physics? Periodic table.
That wonderful table that was Ox. That was compiled by de Menier Mendeleev. We have to explain whether it's uranium, GDP, or the green hydrogen, everything that we are talking about on an economic level, if we really want to, I don't know how consultations go, because I can only imagine how tricky it is to explain some of this.
They have to explain everything.
We have to explain everything, but I don't think it's, it's much of a consultation if you're doing it in English.
No, but that's the thing. It's a discussion that I even had earlier today. Remember what was our diagnosis of what Anacleta saw in Rundu?
Yeah.
It was because the communication wasn't proper.
Yeah.
This means people were WhatsApp sharing that stakeholder engagement invitation, and the public was like, What is this? What's the nasty? What must I go do there? Is there food? Yes or no? No. And then they don't show up.
No, if there's no food, if there's no refreshment, people are not coming.
There's no incentive to go waste your time there.
Yeah, and
there was no food. Usually these events have food.
No, I don't know. I'm assuming. I'm just filling in that part.
And you know what is very interesting about this thing of rare earth minerals is that by the time we know them very well, people have already taken their things. By the time we know them very well, people have already data centers, the EVs that we are buying. These are our things.
We are buying them in the end.
The thing is, this is what I pointed out earlier.
Maybe the, when you see somebody driving, for example, a Range Rover in Namibia, maybe the only thing that is foreign there is just fuel. Most of these things maybe are our things. You don't know. Maybe they are our things.
Yeah.
Because you do not know them.
Look, if you go back to the raw material, all roads will lead to Africa. But, the point you made, by the time that we figure out how to mine or process these things, people have already moved on to different ways of doing the exact same thing that we are mining these rare earth minerals for. Well, they are doing exactly that, which is what I pointed out earlier, that the European Commission wrote a whole article on it on how a lot of companies are investing in alternative forms of making efficient magnets separate from the rare earth minerals, or two of which are found in Namibia.
You know, if something you do not know it and it has value, you don't have regulation over it, somebody just taking it and go. You don't even know what it is. It's the same thing. The example was given to say, if we just say, no, we are crossing all the borders, then I give you 20 diamonds, you give me 20 diamonds.
Yeah.
Somebody would rather take a plate of food than that diamond, because you are not going to use it.
No, but that's what Helmut and I said.
Yeah.
I mean, why would every finance minister we know show up at our budget unveiling, say, the diamonds didn't perform very well, guys. Mm. So, just so that you know, the returns from the diamonds were not good. Mm. But then, when you look at a resource, now you ask yourself, David, you can't eat, sleep, consume, put that diamond in your car, if you have a car, or in your bicycle, or like me, in my motorcycle. You can't do anything with that diamond.
Somebody would rather take a fat cake.
Okay, y'all are missing something.
What are we missing?
There's someone's daughter out there waiting for a diamond.
Noch nooit will I put it on her fingers. Noch nooit. She will get regular gold.
Someone's son out there is budgeting.
That's his stupidity. I'm sorry.
That's
his stupidity. He should know by now that a diamond in Namibia is the one thing you should not be able to afford. Because we will all ask a question. What tender did you get?
And the other thing, you know what, one thing when you look at, for example, Zimbabwe.
Mm.
You know, people always criticize me to say, no, Zimbabwe is not a good country. But, you know, there are things happening there. Apart from...
I've stopped many times this short from saying that, but thank you, David.
You know what, Tane?
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need to praise a person where things are going well. I'm not saying Emmerson Mnangagwa is a good person and he's the best leader in Africa.
Mm.
But there are key reforms that they have done.
Yeah.
And they are practical. They are giving tangible outcomes.
Yeah.
Especially when they indicate to say, no, we understand that when it comes to raw materials, we have been doing that for a very long time. Just in the span of 3 years.
Mm.
Then they say, okay, if you are exporting lithium, at least semi-processed.
Mm.
If it's platinum, semi-processed. If it's gold,
semi-processed.
And become and build industries here.
Yeah.
You know what happened? International institutions or international corporations and also other big players in that sector, they don't have any option because those guys they produce a lot of gold and many other things.
Mm.
Now they are performing very well. Look at what they did in the past the first quarter of 2026. Look at their mining sector.
Mm.
Look at the performance of Zimbabwe in end of last year. The economic performance of Zimbabwe end of last year. We can debate it tomorrow about the extension of terms and any other things.
Yeah.
But what they did well is making sure that if you want to eat, less people finalize their products here. Because the example I give you of a Range Rover, maybe even a plane, even EV cars that we look at.
Mm.
Because somebody cannot just come here and say, no, we are going through, we must advance AI and everybody must have a tablet. Tablets from where? Made by what?
Yeah. From who?
From who?
Yeah.
What elements are involved there? Which knowledge can we harness from that aspect? But I think looking at the bigger picture, I think the discussion should be expanded, like what he said, to beyond the technical terms.
Mm.
A scientist must know that not everybody did science. Mm. When you go to Hangwena, when you go to Umsati, when you go to Kavango East and West, try to communicate very well. You mentioned very well this aspect of poor communication. Yeah. People can come and defend themselves that they communicated. Why your communication strategy does not have results? No, it's true. What's going on?
Who did you communicate with?
You know, sometimes you cannot just come and debate. Just say, yes, here we did not do things right. Then we will communicate later. Your communication strategy produce you 2% of those results.
Mm.
Well, then who are you blaming?
Well, now that we are on this semi-processed and processed.
I don't think Rundu is just...
It's not only Rundu.
Two people.
It's not only Rundu.
I know there are a lot of people.
Because that percentage now is probably smaller. The people that showed up.
No, no, no. I'm just giving an example.
Yeah. Mm. But 2% is still tiny. Yeah.
While we are on this topic of processed and semi-processed, you also got yours. Thank you very much. Now, just let's look at there's one article.
Do you know who owns African News?
Who is that?
I saw their logo together on the Euro News. Dear Lord. So that technically, because they use the same font in design, you can assume it's a European project.
Right.
But anyway, you were saying, Amber.
Yeah, what I was saying is, I have, you know, when it comes to processing on the African continent.
Wikipedia says Euro News.
Of course it is. Now, that's another problem that's basically, you know, makes my point even more delicious in the, you know, which is contained in that article. So, this was a few weeks ago, you know, about a month or two. Zimbabwe shipped its first consignment of lithium sulfate on, lithium sulfate on Monday. And just, you know, this was in July, July? When was this? April. Zimbabwe shipped its first consignment of lithium, raising Harare's hopes for becoming a hub for battery mineral processing. Now that sounds like, you know what, it's, Africa, finally we are doing, no, read on. Zimbabwe shipped its first consignment, then that's basically, you know, the same headline. But the first paragraph says the following. The news comes from just months after the country banned the export of raw lithium in an effort to force a local processing, boost export earnings, and create skilled industrial jobs. Excellent move.
Mm.
Now, what I'm heading to is who did the processing. Now, Chinese investors have spent millions of dollars to build the plant to process the lithium in a form that Zimbabwe would allow it to, would allow it to exit. In other words, the Zimbabwe just told the companies that are operating in their lithium industry that if you want, you can still operate, you can still get lithium from here, but you'll have to process it here. Now, what they did was they, instead of shipping everything to process it in China, they brought the infrastructure built in Zimbabwe and then process it there.
Yeah.
And then that's the condition they were given, that you can ship it, but you first have to process it here. Was that Malaysia or Indonesia that gave Apple somewhat the same ultimatum? When it comes to there was that
iPhone 17,
it was Indonesia.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? Excellent product, wonderful product. But we also want to, we are working on a local content policy empowerment here.
No. They said, I'm reminding you of the agreement we signed last year.
Yeah, but the agreement was
that phone gets here, you need to prove that phone at least has 70% local content input.
Yeah, look, I think with Zimbabwe, it's a very good thing, because if I know what my minerals, how my minerals are being processed, if I know the steps, if I know how many jobs are created, that's why I was a bit angry. But you gave me update, especially when Namibia delegation visited China, to say our interest, should be building relationship with the business community.
Yeah.
But our leaders must make sure that every time you visit France, every time you visit Canada, every time you go to China, get an opportunity and go to those industries that are using raw materials that are coming from Namibia. Not to say being envious about what other people are doing, but to get this understanding to say, if it was done in the country, how many of...
show me the process.
Yeah, how many of my people would have those employment?
Yeah.
Because looking at the numbers, I don't want to say things are not doing very well, but we are maybe doing our best.
well, in essence, growth is still growth. Yeah, even if just 2%.
Yeah, growth is still growth, but there must be a very loud, we need the data that are convincing us that we don't only speak.
Yeah, but here's the question. Here's the question.
Yeah.
Just to supplant or just to supplement what you guys have said and what we've been talking about.
Mm.
On the aspect of growth,
we
are slightly misleaded or misguided on understanding and championing GDP and growth for GDP. The exercise that exists, before I let the caller come through, the exercise that exists, David, is that when we look at GDP, GDP is what output each person in Namibia is contributing to that number. So that's that number divided over 3 million.
Mm.
But I cannot find 200,000 Namibian dollars, 200 plus thousand Namibian dollars in my bank account every year. I don't see it.
Yeah.
And I know you don't see it.
But if
I
you
know,
look at the numbers in terms of how we calculate GDP, that's what it's supposed to translate into.
That is what it's supposed to, which is misguided because GDP is then used in reverse to define gross national income, which is the income indicator.
Yeah.
Because they both interlink the two things.
Mm.
And like you and I highlighted at Helmut as well. The guy that invented the GDP thing, John Maynard Keynes, literally said, it's not a perfect indicator.
Yeah, you know, in terms of the economic indicators or calculation of the economic growth, the structure of economy can also come in.
Yeah.
To say, if you have highest unequal, you know, country in the world, or the second highest unequal countries in the world in terms of economic distribution,
your
numbers would definitely not mean anything. Whether you grow to 10%.
And that is us.
Yeah. You would definitely not mean anything unless you change your structure of your economy, unless you change the things that you discuss here, because you know, when Namibia was upgraded as a middle-income country, the celebration was on the certificate.
Wait, there was a celebration?
Yeah, but the content, was it felt? Was it felt? Was it felt? No, nobody felt that. When you look at now, Zimbabwe
all I remember was whining.
Yeah.
All I remember specifically, wasn't it? That was in 2018, sorry. That was when Schleitwein was still a finance minister.
Yeah, because from 2009, people had this hope to say, no, we are upper middle income economy now. I think let's give it a try. In the next, maybe in the next 5 years, we are doing very well in terms of human development. But the aspect of human development, regardless of the numbers of people that we are less, we have been too few to be poor. We are still now continue to be too few to be poor. But I think the structure is still a pain in Namibia, especially looking at the distribution. But also industries, I'm asking myself to say, I do not want to put my government under pressure to say build this industry in the next 2 months. Well, but I want to see
if
this.
Joseph Stalin did it in 5 years with cities. He built cities in 5 years.
Yeah, but that is
something else.
That is 1940s. Yeah, but what I want to see the signs of practical implementation.
Yeah,
I want to see the sign of tracking of progress. Let's wait, because sometimes you also need to wait and see. I've seen a lot of pronunciation, especially NPC.
Yeah.
I see a lot of a very loud voice about what you want to get into, but I also see a lot of conferences coming on my way. And
they keep repeating the same
and
stuff.
And they keep repeating themselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, I know, like our colleague, Kanjengo, or Inamenwa, he wrote the article about, or the opinion piece at the start of the year about what do these conferences mean.
Yeah.
But it's the perspective that you take. The conference is there to invite the investor.
Yeah.
Basically, to promote Namibia. To the investor, to say, hey, this is Namibia. Look how beautiful Namibia is, you know? Namibia has a desert that meets the ocean. Nobody has that. Look at Namibia. It has some sort of a savannah, but Namibia also has this, and it has this. Don't worry about the people. Don't worry. Don't worry. Don't worry. Don't just look at Vundu. Just look at Erongo, and then get on the plane.
Please.
But you know what is very interesting? The investor is already here before you invite him.
No,
they just want formal invitation.
You know, that's
investor's been here for 6 months now. staying here in a Hilton or in a Vani.
They've been here for six months.
The investor is traveling in a Tosha every day and, you know, getting lost in your ovaries and all these things. It's a true thing. And that is, economic intelligence. Every country do that.
Look,
it's an open thing to say, let's go and search for opportunity. Yes. That's just a formal invitation to say, no, wow, I'm happy for this invitation. I'm coming to Namibia for this. But the investor has economic insight better than you, even who is here.
That's what I keep saying.
People have more information about Namibian resources than the Minister of Mines itself. You can say,
we know pick the worst example. Look, the thing is, what David is saying is what I've been seeing.
Yeah.
When an investor shows up with a suit to whatever ministry or the state house, talking about, you know, I have had this light bulb moment of investing in your country. They have been researching your country's history, political and economy for decades. There are firms that you can basically hire to do exactly that for you.
Yes.
And every reasonable person, which is what I would assume is someone with a lot of money, is you have to be reasonable. Otherwise, you're going to be broken 5 minutes. Now, the thing is, that's exactly what they do. Before they show up to invest, they're not just looking at the country's economy. If we learned something from, you know, from Donald Trump's meeting with oil executives shortly after Maduro's overthrow, is that I think it was the ExxonMobil CEO that told him that you have to understand that we've been doing this for decades.
Yeah.
Before you go into a country, you don't just look at the economy. You have to look at your relationship with the people.
Yeah. We quickly take an ad break, guys. We'll come back after this.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a U-Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kilograms of Surf hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 ml sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. U-Save. Where else?
So we come back, guys. Helmut, you were still halfway through a train of thought.
Yeah, welcome back to, you know, Hayes, Frank Frederick.
What did you say?
I don't know where that came from, but anyway.
Yeah.
What
did you want to say, Helmut?
Home run. But in Afrikaans.
Okay.
You see, for investors.
Hayes, Frank Fredericks. What
the? Okay.
But okay, yeah.
Frederick is anonymous. But look, the thing is, when it comes to investment, we have got to stop assuming that when an investor shows up and they are taking pictures with the minister or the president, that they are new here, because they are not.
They've been here.
Yeah. It's either they've been here or they have hired someone to get them everything they needed to know about the industry they're interested in investing in. And they have each and every single receipt.
Yeah.
If anything, they know more about that industry than the minister or the president they're standing next to.
Yeah. No, it's just for formality.
That's just for pictures and smiles and all that.
Yeah.
But for some reason, that's what hypes us up that, you know what, you know, well, in this year, this person came in. Yes, physically they did. But in terms of getting all the information, investment information they need to make the final investment decision, no one just shows up 5 minutes. No one just lands at international at Jose Cuervo International Airport and then just whimsically invest $1 billion in an industry they haven't read up on.
Or a country they haven't seen.
No.
You know, people were shocked when, was it CIA?
Those guys have a whole profile on every country. You can read about them.
Namibia, no, people were shocked because information that were there, we don't even know them. When they have a profile on Namibia, then people read to say, no. How come these people know us inside out?
Because intelligence is about information.
Oh, when you see those red number plates, those embassy cars driving up and down the Namibian roads, that's when they are going on the holidays that you guys are talking about, going to the lovely or lodges.
But even when we are there, that is not, I'm not saying it's something which is bad. What I'm saying is that at what game are we playing? Because somebody was arguing to say intelligence has evolved. This thing of correcting information, now the Neds are the one who have a lot of information than agencies. AI now is more faster than how things have been.
But when it comes to storage, much of the intelligence information is most likely going to be analog.
Yeah.
But
the direction is that now Africa is no more at war as it has been, and intelligence also evolve.
Yeah.
That's why people say, no, look, let's focus more on economic intelligence. Namibia is losing a lot of money. I was reading a report, a very, very nice report was, who is this lady from, I think the Namibian or something, report something regarding these scammers that have been around for a very long time, looking at billions of dollars that, Namibia have lost, or Namibia being a center or a hub of scammers and all these things. And people say, no, why can't we look at economic intelligence? Let us look at how the money is being
lost.
Which
scammers? Romance scammers?
Romance and also finance.
Mm.
Let us look at the different dimension to say, how do you protect the minerals? Yeah. How do you protect critical rare earth minerals? What are the new things happening in the industry? When these guys are mining, do they only take what they were supposed to take, or they are also taking that soil so that it can be tested outside, the country? What do we know about what is our long-term vision of the Namibia mining sector? China can stand up and do a study.
Remember when you went to that event last 2 weeks back
regarding
the mining?
Yeah.
Launch.
Mm-hmm.
Was it for the expo or for?
Yeah, that is just expo.
What did that guy tell you? It's literally his words that you are saying there.
Mm.
What did that guy tell you? Was it the CEO or the MD of the thing? Where he said, what was the thing? In terms of looking at the value addition component.
Oh, yeah. I can remember correctly, especially when it comes to value addition.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to say is that, how do we get there? In terms of future planning, to say how can Namibia mining, how is our mining sector looking like in the next 20 years?
Yeah.
Are we still going to continue talking? Are we still going to continue talking about value addition? Or we are just going to, to be where we are?
Yeah.
Are we going to have industries that are standing, or we are just going to be where we are? How much mining going to contribute to employment in the next 20 years. Let's look at 20 years, because one of the things that make me angry, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm young.
Mm.
I hate somebody who plan just for the 4 years, because that is the 4 year that the person is an MD, or is the 4 year that the person is in parliament. I hate that. That is what we are. Because somebody said, no, guys, let's move very fast. Because if we lose this 10%, 10% in our oil, we are not going to get it anyway.
Yeah.
You say, no, chief, your term will just come to an end.
Yeah.
But the resources of the country will still remain there.
Make it a long-term project.
Yeah, make it a long-term project.
Let's see what's happening.
Yeah.
Now they're developing a key performance indicator for themselves only by saying, this is where I stop and end. Now, what happens if if the government likes that person so much where they say, you know what, we believe in you, David.
Yeah.
Why don't you take another 5 years and stay in the post?
No.
Now you have to rethink your position, reassess. Now people find out, oh, but David, the performance indicators are not so good. You promised something here. Improve, please.
No, these things must really stop. It's the same thing that people start spending the budget money, 1 month before the end of the financial year. What were you doing in that process? All the workshops, all the travel, all these things. It's really wrong, because then you are becoming so selfish.
Yeah.
Because if you are not able to do that, don't be pressured, because it's not your thing.
Yeah.
We can come and go, but the resources are still going to be there. But people, they must know these things. Even with planning, how many rash decisions have we made? How many, investors did we say no to?
Yeah.
How many people did we call and call them to order. Do you really want to tell me that all the international, I know they are bringing a lot of money, all the international corporations that we are dealing with, why are they not appearing into, or they are just Ethica and do all the things?
Yeah. Ethica, no. if there's
why are they not being held accountable?
If there's one thing that Jeffrey Epstein boys have taught me is that a bunch of the, you know, your investors are most likely, which is why I said before you, you know, the NIPDB guys, their vetting process for investors, they should, on a series of questions, whatever vetting process they have for foreign investors, they must always include, were you, did you by any chance work with Epstein? Because these are the guys that are rich and powerful. So now that now putting all that you know that funny and very realistic joke aside, let's come back to look. SADC in 2021 decided to put up you know this structure to look at okay how can we coordinate Africa's SADC's water and energy resources, because these are the two main things that they looked at, but they focused more on energy. You know, how can we connect, Africa?
Yeah.
Oh boy. They came up with plans that had to do with SADC, how to bring SADC.
Wait, who? SADC came up with his plans.
Okay. I'm assuming SADC came up with it because I don't want to say that GIZ came up with money and the plans.
But it could be South Africa came up with money and the plans.
No, the money is definitely came out of Europe. Okay, 100 million.
Then it's GIZ.
Yeah.
There you go, Helmut.
Yeah, 100 million. Look, for me, I like to look at the money because I've come to learn that that's where the real power is. I don't care who is in a suit giving fancy speeches and who has what office. If you want to understand the real power behind any institution, find out who is funding it. Because that makes a lot of sense. Because if the person financing it withdraws, there's no amount of fancy speeches that are going to keep that institution afloat.
You know, just not divert you from that conversation, especially when you speak about money. Today, when you look at what the Director General of Africa, CDC, has stated, it was more powerful. Now, I also started thinking to say, is this really, these are all the facts that are in order. Yeah. Is it a political speech or is it really something that is coming from the heart? He gave a very brilliant presentation, especially looking at the caring of Ebola and other things. One of the aspects, apart from insecurity, he spoke about the funding.
Yeah.
To say when you are saying we have a gap of 1.4 billion US dollars to end this Ebola thing, we are not saying let's go outside the continent.
Yeah.
The money is here. Get your governments in order. To say get your government in order, let's calculate all the money that is getting lost from for corruption and all these things. Just strengthen your system, then Africa can fund itself. And he gave a very brilliant presentation, especially regarding the aspect of funding, to say when you have fundings, you have control over the direction of your process.
Yeah.
But if somebody is funding you, it's quite very, very difficult. Because I want to make a plan to deal with you, then I invite you to fund my plan to deal with you.
You do realize that makes us not very different from a slave queen who doesn't have a job but wants to look good all the time.
Yes.
So now they have to look good on someone's budget.
Yes.
That's us.
But you are never in the photo.
No.
You're never in the photo.
When the evidence is taken, you are taking the photo.
Yes, of the food
you're the one
that you paid for.
Yes. and her posing in the car park and everything, you know. Yeah.
You know, but there is also
you're not going to be in the photo because
there's also one thing which was stated apparently the practice of a small state diplomacy.
Yeah.
There are certain levels that you understand that you are playing with the big boys. Then you make yourself smaller at a certain level. But you must also draw the line between being a small state in the negotiations with being just not being there or being too weak.
Yeah.
Because if you are saying it's a small state diplomacy to say for a small state to grow, it must negotiate at this level. Then it must grow slow by slow. Don't just come to say, no, I want 90% of my things and all these things. But there must be a difference to say a small state that is playing diplomacy with a big country, at what level? At what level is not too weak? Or at what level it can say, no, this is the line, this is the line. Mm-hmm. I know I don't have industry, but I have majority of the people are young people. I know I don't have these machines and all these things.
I don't want wars. I don't like wars.
Yeah, I don't have wars, but I own the land and you are in my country and let's negotiate further. You can't push me to 10%.
That's basically Namibia. But yeah, Namibia is not doing the negotiating. Even though we were negotiating with China and with Russia and now with South Africa, we didn't go back to the oil guys.
No.
We are running on, trust me, bro.
Yeah, look, that which David is explaining, we just recently now did. Remember?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The Russian delegation that was here in March or April?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's also wrap up time.
Yeah, and just before we end, and then it was obviously South Africa and China now within the span of 3 weeks.
Yeah.
That our president obviously went to go and visit alongside the international relations minister. You explaining basically what Namibia just did.
Yeah.
However, it falls short of the other example you cited.
Mm.
We didn't go back to the oil majors and say, listen, my bra, that 10% discussion, can't we, you know,
adjust it? But the thing is also that we need to put our house in order.
Yeah.
We need to have regulations, a framework. I'm always giving this example to say the pace of which the exploration and the digging and all these things are taking place is very faster than how we put our legal framework in order.
Oh, yes. If
you have a bill, which is it under the table now or is it going to come back
probably for debate, probably forgotten,
that is going to make Namibia an industry of oil and gas, but you don't even know.
Yeah.
If these people take oil tomorrow, they will start shipping.
Yeah, and it's there out. It's 300 kilometers out there.
Yeah. Why you are debating who has power? Yeah. Why you are debating who must control what and when?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Guys, we're quickly taking a short break. After the break, we'll come back with our goodbyes. On that note, we'll be back, dear listeners.
Care that goes where you go. That's international travel insurance through NHP. We facilitate cover of up to 10 million Namibian dollars per member for medical emergencies abroad as part of your membership. No extra charge. To receive your policy within minutes, simply register at nhp.com.na before you travel. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Coming back, guys, and just for us to say goodnight, from my side, let's see each other again, same time, same place. David, your side?
Shop, shop.
Helmut, your side?
Shop, shop.
On that note, shop, shop, snipers, and let's see each other again, same time, same place. This has been The Home Run from 4 to 7. Stay tuned for the next program after the break.